Use Committee. This is a regularly scheduled meeting of the Land Use Committee. We're also joined by members of the Planning and Development Board. I'm going to take a moment to introduce my colleagues, staff. I'm going to let Peter introduce the members of the Planning and Development Board. We'll go over our agenda tonight. We'll get right to work. We are being both audio-taped and videotaped tonight. To my immediate left is Councilor Deb Crosley, Councilor at Large from Ward 5 and a member of the committee. Behind her is Councilor Susan Albright, Councilor at Large from Ward 2, not a member of the committee. Immediately in front of me is Councilor Brian Yates, Councilor at Large from Ward 5, not a member of the committee. Behind him is Scott Lennon, President of the City Council, Councilor at Large from Ward 1, a member of the committee. And next to Councilor Yates, to his left, is Councilor Jake Auchincloss, Councilor at Large from Ward 2, and a member of the committee. I do expect we'll be joined by, I hope, most, if not all, of the other committee members this evening. To my far right, Neil Cronin from the Planning Department. To the far right of the desk is Rita Young from the Legal Department. Our Director of Planning, Barney Heath. Next to him is Michael Gruber, also from the Planning Department. Our committee clerk, Nadia Khan. Peter, do you want to quickly introduce the members of your board?
Yes, I'm Peter Doringer, Vice Chair of the Planning and Development Board. On my left is Megan Merov, Sonia Pariska, and to my far right, Planning Director Barney Heath, who is an ex officio member of the board, and we're also joined tonight by Rachel Powers.
Wonderful. Thank you. And we've been joined by Councilor Jay Harney, Ward Councilor from Ward 4, and a member of the committee. We have two items before us this evening. One relates, there's actually two items, by Northland Oak Street LLC, Northland Tower Road Investors LLC. One's 133-17, the other's 134-17. The first is a request to rezone 5 parcels of land, and the second is a request for what I'll characterize as a very modest special permit in connection with some parking. The second item tonight is 132-17, a special permit to amend a special permit for Kessler Woods by Kessler Woods LLC. Just so everyone is quite clear this evening, I do not expect that we're going to vote on either of these items this evening. In fact, I think it's highly unlikely we'll be dealing with the Northland item for quite some time. The Kessler Woods item, I'm hoping we take up again in the next few weeks or perhaps over the summer. We'll have to talk about scheduling with the committee clerk. That one, I think, is going to be more ripe for action, I think, depending on what transpires this evening. The way we're going to proceed this evening is we're going to have a presentation on the Northland project from the petitioner's counsel, Attorney Schlesinger. My understanding is he's going to provide us with an overview of why zoning change is appropriate here. At my request, we're going to have a very limited discussion of the special permit issues involved in this. Frankly, they're nominal, as I think my colleagues would know, and probably something that I think were the developer so to choose, they could get their parking issue resolved probably by merging a couple of lots. I realize that there's some concerns on their part by doing that way, some financial issues that they claim they have. But in the context, it's very minor. What I'm hopeful that we get is once we hear from them, not only about the zone change, but at least what their vision is for this rather large parcel, I'd like to open it up to public comment, if anyone has comment at that time, noting that the public hearing is going to stay open through the length of this project. I'm not going to ask the Planning Department to weigh in on anything this evening unless there's some general things that they want to direct us to. I'm going to entertain questions and comments from my colleagues about their concerns and questions about the zone change and also, frankly, what the real vision is for this property, because as I've expressed to the developers and to the Planning Department, while we know this is a request for a zone change, this council historically, when a private developer comes in seeking to do something different, wants to know not only what the zone change is, but what the special permit that's associated with it is. Understanding the petitioner is not ready to engage in a detailed special permit process, they do have a vision here. That vision's been transmitted to the mayor, it's been transmitted to the planning department, it's been transmitted publicly, and I think this will actually be our first opportunity to see what that general vision is in what's really the appropriate setting for discussing that vision, which is the city council. Because I'm going to remind everyone that in this city, under our charter, it's the city council that makes the decisions about land use. Whether a project's good or bad in the eyes of the mayor, the planning department, or anyone else, it's our judgment, ultimately, informed, of course, by a variety of opinions as to whether a zone change is appropriate or not, and ultimately whether a special permit is appropriate or not. So, with that context in mind, Attorney Schlesinger, all yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to note that I have authorized all the gentlemen in the room to remove their jackets if they want to do so. Mr. Chairman, members of the Land Use Committee, city councilors, Mr. Chairman of the Planning Board, acting chairman, members of the Planning Board, my name is Alan Schlesinger, an attorney with the firm of Schlesinger and Bookbinder, 1200 Walnut Street. I represent Northland Investment Corporation and its affiliates. With me tonight are my partners, Steve Bookbinder, Peter Standish, and Ken Gonzalez of Northland, David Dixon and Jeff Souser of Stantec, and Kurt Kittau of VHB, the engineering consultant. As Chairman indicated, before you tonight, I petition for the rezoning of five parcels from mixed use one to from mixed use one to business four, and for a special permit for non-accessory parking at 156 Oak Street. That special permit cannot be granted in the mixed use one district. I'll say that the record should include our part of petitions, the filed plans, the zoning review memorandum, the binder of documents which we provided to you on Friday over the weekend, and the planning department memo of June 9. The special permit application for the non-accessory parking is not a special permit for the proposed Northland project. The purpose of the special permit is to facilitate the efficient releasing of 156 Oak Street, the mill building, and Steve will review that special permit later. Since it's not a special permit for the project, this is an unusual night. We have asked the council to start a process to initiate discussion and to engage in this committee in proactive planning. We have the luxury of some time, and we can discuss issues on a broader scale, such as demographics, the history of Needham Street, the structure of the current zoning, and to think in advance about what would be best without reacting to a specific plan. We'll hear from David Dixon with a way to think about these issues and how they apply to us. This is a win-win, because nothing bad can happen from the discussion, and maybe together we can form a shared vision. At the end of the presentation, we will ask you for a schedule of consideration leading to your guidance and hopefully your action by the end of the year. Tonight is the 45th meeting we have held with either neighbors, the public, councilors, or city staff. And this, our first meeting with the council, kicks off the next phase of this important project. Tonight we will neither ignore nor present the elephant in the room, which is the proposed Northland mixed-use project. I will defer the plan, which many of you have seen, but the rezoning request does not authorize the project. It is our intention to show it, so we're not hiding it, but the plan is not before the council. We expect it to be in 2018. I would like to introduce Peter Standish, Senior Vice President of Northland Investment Corporation.
Attorney Schlesinger, thank you. But before you go, let's talk about the elephant in the room. You have a vision for this project. You've put it out there repeatedly. I think in conjunction with what you're doing and asking us for zoning relief, we need to see that. And it's your prerogative not to put it out there, but I think that may affect how this goes forward.
I intend to show it in about 10 minutes, Mr. Chairman. Maybe 15.
Thank you very much. My name is Peter Standish. I am Senior Vice President of Northern Investment Corporation. Northern was founded in 1970 in a small office located above Cabot's Ice Cream in Newtonville. In 1983, the company constructed and relocated to 2150 Washington Street, where the company has been for the past 34 years. In 1979, Northern developed 241-281 Needham Street, better known as Marshall's Plaza, which was the first new large retail development on Needham Street. The property was in the manufacturing district and was built on as a matter of right, complying with the existing zoning. In 1980, Northam then acquired the industrial building across the street at 260 Needham Street, which was at the time used as a warehouse and distribution facility. Northam then redeveloped the property in 1997 into a retail store for Lanes and Things, which was approved under a special permit from the Board of Aldermen. Since 2005, Northam has acquired the former Ivex Industrial Complex at 55 Tower Road, the renovated Psycho Petty Mill Building at 166 Oak Street, and the industrial building located at 160 Charlemont, formerly owned by H.C. Stark Companies. The total acreage of our assembled properties amounts to 22.7 acres on the west, or the Marshall side of Needham Street, and 6 acres on the east, or the TJ Maxx side. Northern has a vision to redevelop our properties into a vibrant mixed-use center for live, work, and play that creates a fitting gateway for the city and Needham Street corridor, respects the rich heritage and character of the Upper Falls neighborhood, anchors the N-squared Innovation District, and fulfills the vision of the city's comprehensive plan. We envision that this transformative project will create new opportunities for housing diversity for the city, integrated office uses, appropriately scaled retail, and new community gathering places. The development will also extend important connections to the Greenway and Upper Falls neighborhood, as well as to the Oak Hill neighborhood, with pedestrian-friendly sidewalks and street frontage along Needham Street. We are asking the council and the planning board to look at our assemblage of properties and engage with us in a visioning for the future. We believe that in the foundation of the city's comprehensive plan, and in particular, the mixed-use centers amendment. Our planning incorporates new principles. We will be proposing a mix and scale of residential, office, and retail uses that creates a critical mass of each use to create a synergy within the development that assures long-term vibrancy and stability. At the same time, we are absolutely committed to affirmatively addressing all of the issues and concerns that are raised by the community, stakeholders, and the city. We have spent a considerable amount of time over the past 6 months soliciting feedback from our stakeholders to our vision, and we will continue to do so as we move forward. What we hope to accomplish with this application in front of you is to reaffirm and apply the city's 2011 comprehensive plan toward rezoning of our 28-acre assemblage of properties from MU1 to B4, and to establish a process for community engagement. We look forward to working with you, the planning board, city staff, and the community as we go forward. Thank you very much.
We've been joined by Councilor David Kalis, Councilor at Large from Ward 8, not a member of the committee, Councilor Jim Cody, Councilor at Large from Ward 3, and a member of the committee. I think I've got it. Oh. And how can I forget my vice chair, Councilor Greg Schwartz, Councilor at Large from Ward 6, vice chair of the committee.
Mr. Jim, as we go forward, I'm going to be referring to the booklets that I think everybody received and the tab numbers in them and various plans and documents in the booklet. This is the land to be rezoned. It's also shown in tab 2 in the project book. 5 lots at 156 Oak Street, which is over here, which is, by the way, this is Needham Street, Oak Street, Christina Street, and the Greenway. 156 Oak Street is the Channel Mill building, the old building. Second parcel is a parcel which has some old industrial buildings at 55 Tower Road. 275, 281 Needham Street, which is the Marshall's Plaza. 260 Needham Street, which is TJX. And 160 Charmont, which is formerly of the Stark properties. We recognize that this petition is asking the council to do something which it generally has not done before. That is to separate the zoning decision from the special permit decision in the manner of most of the cities and towns in the Commonwealth. This action, however, is not unprecedented. For example, you did it last week on June 5th, in which you...
Wasn't that a city-owned property?
Yes. You rezoned the Stanton Avenue Water Tower from public use to MR3 in anticipation of a land disposition to encourage proposals. You did it in 2012 on Austin Street after the Joint Advisory Planning Group said, quote, rezoning should be acted upon by the city prior to the RFP being sent out in order to provide regulatory certainty to developers. I understand there is a distinction, those parcels were public, but I think it is a distinction without a difference. The rezoning is a message of proactive planning typically done either by a town meeting or a city council, signaling that the city wants a development of a certain general nature on a property, but not vesting any permitting rights. What we'll show tonight is, first, that the mixed-use district generally is a misnomer and an historical anomaly. Second, that the mixed-use district does not apply to most or all of Needham Street. Third, that Newton has created a vision of a different and forward-looking development program in the comprehensive plan which you adopted. And fourth, that a mixed-use center at this site is consistent with forward-looking.
Mr. Attorney Schlesinger, could you tell us just for context where else in the city we have DU4 currently?
I found one at Newton Corner, the assisted living, Evans Park.
It's helpful for us to do that, just so we have some context of what you're looking for.
Chestnut Square, maybe, and I think either the Riverside Office Building might be.
I don't think Riverside Office Building is BU4. That's a mixed use, I think.
Riverside.
It'd be helpful. We don't have to do it now, but for a later date, if you can't come up with it, I think it'd be helpful to put it in context for us. Go ahead, please.
Okay. The fifth thing we want to show tonight is that the vision can be completed within the existing zoning, within the before district. Let's start with the existing zoning. The slide is in tab 4 of the book, and you can see that the westerly side of Needham Street is blue. That's the mixed-use 1 district. The northeasterly part of the street is mixed-use 2. By coincidence, last Tuesday night, we had a little preview of understanding the mixed-use 1 district with a petition to allow a bank in the mixed-use 1 district over there. Council Schwartz and Auchincloss were asking to understand what is allowed on Needham Street if not a bank. Many people in Newton are surprised to learn that retail is not allowed as of right on Needham Street. The mixed-use 1 district was created in 1988 when Needham Street had been zoned manufacturing, which some people called the Wild West and other people called the good old days. In 1988, the rezoning envisaged Needham Street as a tech corridor. So light manufacturing and office were encouraged. That is reflected in the ordinance. The allowed items are on tab 4 of your book. We've copied sections of the zoning ordinance. You can see the summarized there. The two uses are permitted uses of office, assembly, and health clubs. Many uses, including retail and banks, which are separate category are allowed by special permit, identified as SP in the chart. On page 4 of the narrative, we gave you a separate narrative, which is tab 1, we did a summary of the special permit uses. Residential uses are allowed in theory, but the dimensional requirement of 10,000 square feet per unit means that there never has been, and in all likelihood never will be, a residential use. Single-family houses are not allowed in the district. In the narrative, you'll see the uses which are prohibited in the M1 use district. Prohibited on Needham Street are assisted living, live workspaces, community use spaces, libraries, car sharing services, and retail sales for facilities. That is to say, less than 5,000 square feet. You do not have the power to grant a special permit for those uses because they are prohibited uses, not special permit uses in the district. Tonight we are asking for a special permit to allow non-accessory parking. That special permit is not available in the mixed-use one district. Non-accessory parking is a prohibited use in the district. We need to note that since the ordinance was adopted 30 years ago, either no or virtually no office construction has occurred on Needham Street. No new light manufacturing has appeared, and the light manufacturing which then existed at New England Concrete Pipe became Avalon. The Polaroid site has become the Nexus. The IVEX site at the Northam property is gone, and the HC Stock property is now partially in this property and partially there. Partially still there. Both from the perspective of what has happened to date and from the perspective of the future, the MU1 district has run its course. If Newton's vision was for this to be a light manufacturing or tech center, we recognize that events have overtaken that vision. It's time for a new vision. In tab 5 is this plan, the existing land use, and what you can see is if you compare the existing land use to the zoned uses, there is virtually no overlap. In this existing use plan, you'll remember that the whole west side was zoned for office and light industry. Everything is that orangey stuff, which is commerce, maybe except for the 233 Needham Street building, which is non-conforming, all retail. The yellow is residential. The purple is manufacturing. You can see the remaining stock properties are manufacturing here. This is the Northland property. It's all vacant. The black line here shows the Northland properties. So, tab 5 in your book also contains a list of what is conforming, non-conforming, or special permit on Needham Street. The office building at 320 Needham Street, down by the river at Christina Street, appears to be conforming. But unless we miss something, every single other property on Needham Street, is either non-conforming from prior to 1988, or granted a special permit since 1988, or the 40B at Avalon. Except as it makes properties either non-conforming or a platform for special permit, the mixed-use one district is, in effect, irrelevant. Consider the prohibited uses in the mixed-use one district. Is it appropriate in 2017 that ride-sharing services, Zipcar, Hubway, and assisted living are prohibited on Needham Street? In the face of all or almost all of the light manufacturing leaving the street over the last 30 years and the changes which have occurred, does a revival of that seem either likely or desirable? After 30 years, it's time for a new vision. The new vision is not whole cloth for Newton. 2002, Mayor Cohen started the process of the comprehensive plan, which you adopted in 2007 and in 2011. the mixed-use center amendment, which is reproduced in tab 7 of your book. Tab 7 is the 18-page mixed-use center's amendment to the comprehensive plan. Northland's request is based upon a critical assumption that the amendment reflects the aspiration of the city council that there should be one or more mixed-use centers in the city. Assuming that is the case, the rezoning request asks whether this is an appropriate location.
Attorney Schlesinger, can you explain to us, can you have the mixed-use concept in any of the business districts?
Yes.
Okay, so it doesn't have to, it could be B3.
Yes, the business districts generally, there are some differences. Automotive uses are only allowed in 2. You can't have banks in 5, but you can look at the...
Generally, I guess so we're clear.
Generally, the concept
of mixed use, just so my colleagues are clear, was passed for all the business districts, not just the B4 district that you're advocating for. Is that right?
We will state later on the reason we are asking for B4 is that B4 is the only district that allows a special permit in excess of 4 stories.
Of 8 stories, I'm sorry?
It's in excess of 4 stories. Actually, in excess of 4 stories, right.
And B4 allows up to 8 stories?
Up to 8 stories, yes.
Okay, go ahead.
The others are limited to 3 or 4. Okay. The criteria for, in the comprehensive plan for locations, is that, number one, the mixed-use center should be located in commercial areas, in areas which already allow the commercial uses, so that a mixed-use center is not to be in a residential area. And the second criteria is that the transit system must be contextual, must be accommodated without damage to the character of the neighborhood. That is the special permit criteria. The amendment, the mixed-use center amendment from 2011, states specifically the reason why the council has and should rezone the land, which is that the process should, and I quote, facilitate early understanding by developers if a proposed project is likely to gain approval before significant resources are committed to specific designs. I call your attention to page 3A-2 of the amendment. We talk about, the amendment talks about...
For a second, Attorney Schlesinger, I'm looking at page 3A2 of your booklet, of the presentation, and I think that draws a distinction when there's multiple properties and ownership versus a single developer. Is the concept different in your view?
You're looking at tab 8, tab 7, page 3A2?
At the end of the first paragraph.
Tab 7, page 3A2.
End of the first paragraph. Just trying to understand if the vision is different when it's a single developer versus a whole area.
No, I think what it's saying is that where multiple properties and ownership are involved, an initial vision could be prepared using all of the property owners. But I don't think it precludes a single property owner from having a vision.
Well, go ahead, please.
To talk about the vision, I would like to introduce David Dixon. We don't usually get to say that the guy who quite literally wrote the book, Urban Design for an Urban Century. David has been working with Northland on the concept and planning of the development, and his letter at the highest level and the broadest vision is included in your book at tab 3. David Dixon.
Good evening. We're joined by Councillor Lipoff, Councillor Large Mordate, a member of the committee. Good evening, sir.
Thank you, and thank you, Alan. And it's a real privilege and honor to be here to address you tonight. I have a feeling that my, in being asked to speak about vision, I probably won't attain the level of specificity that I think the chair has asked for, but I will proceed and give you a sense of sort of the underlying trends, aspirational goals for Newton, for this site, for the neighborhoods around Newton, and the kinds of urban design principles that we think should guide development. And I want to start by saying that clearly a site like this is a unique opportunity. 28 acres located where this is, and I think both Alan and Peter have really sort of captured the strength of this site, the unique qualities of this site. But I think I want to emphasize that in some ways this site is even more valuable when you look at what's happening across Boston. And I have to turn my phone off, which is ringing on my watch. Okay. So, speaking of technology, one of the things that we pay a lot of attention to is underlying data. Whereas for the last, probably from the end of World War II to as recently as 2000, even 2010, most of the growth in our country's population was folks 35 to 65, kids. These are families that have kids and buy cars and continue to live life the way many of us have known it for many years. From 2010 to 2030, our population is literally reshaping itself. Most of our growth is folks over 65 and under 35. These are folks who basically have fewer kids. They have many different kinds of aspirations in terms of how they want to live. One of the most, I think, telling changes is as opposed to the last 60 or 70 years where most new households in the U.S., in Massachusetts, in Boston, and in Newton were families. Going forward, something like 75% of them are going to be singles and couples. And when you look at Newton's growth, and this is true of almost every suburb in the Boston region and many suburbs across the U.S., almost all the growth is going to be folks actually over 65. This actually presents some extraordinary opportunities. It's a changing world, but it's a world that I think offers actually many fascinating opportunities for Newton and opportunities that come home on this site. I'm going to come back to that in a minute. At the same time, not only are we changing as a population, but as everyone here knows, our economy is changing dramatically. Because the number of us are getting older, and more of us getting older than new folks are entering the workforce is shrinking, we are developing a shortage of knowledge workers, and so today, as opposed to over my entire professional life, the kinds of employers that Newton wants, that anybody wants, follow their employees, not the other way around. Everyone is, and particularly in the Boston area, we have a growing shortage of college and university-educated workers. Where do these folks want to live and work? And if I can make this go forward, I'll here we go. So when you look at where these folks want to live and work, they and increasingly their older compatriots, the more education they have, the more they are the kinds of folks that Newton wants living and working in Newton. They want to live and work, not necessarily in the midst of, but in communities that have walkable, mixed-use, lively centers that foster a sense of community. And in fact, when you look across the U.S., it's kind of extraordinary, 25 to 49-year-olds, folks with 4 years or more of education are moving into urban areas, but they're moving into places like Newton Center and Newton Highlands that have access to walkable community centers. And folks with less than 4 years of education are moving out. And that has in part to do that places with access to this kind of walkable community are rising in price a lot faster than the rest of our regions, of our communities. And in fact, when you look at where folks based on affluence are moving, it turns out that since basically coming out of the Great Recession, this trend is accelerating. The more income, the higher your income, the more likely you want to, when you're choosing, to live in a community that has access to a walkable, mixed-use, lively center, as opposed to a more sort of a single-use neighborhood. Again, think of some of the wonderful neighborhoods around Newton's village centers. So it's in this context that we've been looking at this extraordinary site with good folks from Northland and Alan and others.
Councilor Schwartz, I'm sorry.
Yeah, certainly, yes.
Interject?
presentation. I was a little confused by what you just said.
Yeah.
It seemed that you were saying that which one was the chicken, which one was the egg? So, I mean, you're saying that suburbs are more appealing to folks with less college education.
No, not
but they're also more affordable.
Yeah.
So, obviously, if affordability is driving this, people with less education might be getting a less well-paid job. So, does this just reflect an affordability issue, or is it a preference issue?
Thank you very much. It's one married to the other, and I'll try to be a little clear. And first of all, I do not mean for a second to say that folks with more education want to live in cities and folks with less education want to live in suburbs. What I do mean to say is that folks with more education want to live near, maybe it's a short drive, maybe it's within walking distance, of walkable, mixed-use, lively places. And that's very important because most of these opportunities actually exist in suburbs. Cities couldn't possibly hold all these folks. At the same time, if you look at housing prices actually in this region and across the U.S., because folks with higher incomes tend to higher and more education tend to have higher incomes, prices are rising faster, and I think this is true, I understand Newton, but it's certainly true across Boston, both in suburban and in city context, closer to walkable, mixed-use, lively places. There's been a real sort of a reversal. So to some extent, these choices are being driven by economics. It's not city-suburb, it's proximity to walkable versus not.
Can I just add?
Go ahead, Councilor Schwartz, please.
I might be a little thick, but I still am wondering if you're claiming that the affordability is driving the appeal. I'm sorry if I said city centers versus suburbs.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying is walkable commercial, I don't know, centers versus not walkable.
Yeah.
Are you saying the affordability is driving that, or the preferences is driving that, or you're unable to say which one?
No,
is driving
which. I would say the preference is drawing people who have choice towards those places. They are getting the prices of the values of housing, actually, and office rent in those places above the same values further away. So in that sense, their choices are limiting the choices for others, I guess, ultimately.
Right. So you're inferring from that the others' choices are not the same, but perhaps if they had the same pocket money, wouldn't you see both groups going for the...
Yeah.
Are you claiming that neither group...
No, I'm sorry.
You're saying that both groups want to be near commercial centers, but the pricing is making it difficult.
I'm sorry. I think I didn't fully get your question.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Could I just, to follow up on Councilor Schwartz, what role does availability of public transit have in all this?
Availability of public transit plays a very big role, and access to transit certainly attracts people, but we have, if you look across Boston, we're running out of places with access to transit. So our walkable centers that don't have immediate access to transit are increasingly successful. And one of our challenges, of course, is connecting places to transit. Can't connect transit to them very easily. On a side note, and for another meeting, our firm actually does a lot of research on autonomous mobility, and one of the things we're advising lots of communities on is how to connect sites using shared autonomous vehicles to transit. But I think that's for another night. I'll proceed, but certainly welcome any questions. So, Alan and Kent were saying, well, what are some places that share aspirations that I think Newton has? I say my kids grew up in Newton. I have long and proud and very meaningful connections to Newton as a community. And so we picked three for different reasons, and I'm going to go from the bottom to the top. So I don't know how many of you know Belmar in Lakewood, Colorado. Belmar was a shopping center that probably, it was a single center, but it represented a Needham Street-like character. Lakewood encouraged redevelopment of Belmar into a walkable mixed-use development that has done a great deal, actually, to, how should I say it, make Lakewood more competitive in the ways Newton already is for folks to want to live and to work. Rockville, Maryland may be better known to you. Rockville was an area that actually was becoming less competitive as a place to live and work a number of years ago, and sought to redevelop its center from more of a Needham Street model to what is now called Rockville Square, and has been extraordinarily successful in terms of really reinforcing Rockville as a place that families are returning to. One thing I would notice about, emphasize about all three of these projects is one reason we picked them is they're about introducing a kind of a layer of walkability into communities without touching a blade of grass in anybody's front yard.
Yeah. Could you just share with us maybe what the mix is of commercial versus residential in these projects? I mean, we're just trying to get, and I'm going to ask if you would, we appreciate the education. We've spent a lot of time on this committee and this council talking about the benefits of mixed-use districts, walkability. I mean, we've heard that now repeatedly. I think it'd be really helpful to talk about this parcel of property, this land, which you're asking us to rezone here.
Sure.
It'd be very helpful.
Yeah, okay. This and the third example, which is Dublin, Ohio, which is the most affluent neighborhood in suburb in Ohio, are all probably predominantly majority housing because it's that housing that frankly has made them competitive for office.
When you say majority, is it 50-50?
Oh, probably ranging from 50 to 85%.
Right. It would be helpful if you're going to present these at some later date that someone provide us some statistics.
Absolutely.
The other thing, and these are great to have, but for me, what I really want to hear from you is where these are situated, and the access, the real walkability, the traffic around them, and so when I say access, it's both walkable and car, vehicular, before and after type thing, mm-hmm. because I'm looking at this parcel, and there are specific challenges that it has, that if you can talk to these and similarly address those challenges, I think that would be very helpful.
Okay. I think I should accept the chairman's invitation to come back with more information about these. I could address this quickly now, but I'm not sure if I'm abusing your time here or not.
No, probably better that you take your time, and we don't want you to rush, and we don't want you to do something off the cuff, but if you, on behalf of the petitioner, are coming in and giving us examples of other communities, it's really important that we compare apples to apples. If you think Lakewood, Colorado, for example, is an example that we ought to follow, then I think what Councilor Carlos is saying is, look, we have a particular traffic problem in Needham Street. Do they have the same type of problem? How do they solve it? Those types of Councilor Crosby?
Mr. Chairman, I might be the only one here, but I would really like to hear the entire presentation as they have decided to put it forward to us, and I can hold my questions. Because I'm losing track of their message to us with all the interjected questions.
No, I appreciate that, Councilor Crosby. I'll take responsibility for asking too many questions, but I think Councilor Kalis and Schwartz, for example, are just trying to, while the petitioner is up there, just trying to ask informational questions.
I understand, but I don't think they're going anywhere. I'd love to get. Well, I think they're planning to get into the meat of the presentation. I'd love to be able to finish.
If that's what we want, let's get to the meat of the presentation. What are we talking about at this site?
So, to turn to this site, and I promise I look forward to bringing back or providing to your planning staff detailed information on the examples and why we thought they were relevant and how they address the problems that the councilor mentioned. So, what are the core opportunities that we've seen? And I must admit, we looked these opportunities at your comp plan, which I think is terrific, and at the unique role that at least I personally and many of my colleagues have long respected that the village centers have played in the life of Newton, and how to try to capture these qualities going forward. So, if nothing else, this is about enhancing quality of life for the neighborhoods around this site, and particularly within walking distance of this site. It's about reinforcing and building on particularly Upper Falls Village Center, making it more of a center of the life of that neighborhood and nearby neighborhoods too, so Sharon, advancing the evolution of Squared, which actually I think is an extraordinary opportunity, and as somebody who did the last plan for Kendall Square in Cambridge, and very fascinated by the ways in which the region's innovation economy needs to find places to take root in places like N Squared, creating a mixed-use center in the spirit and tradition of Newton's historic growth centers. We're doing this in a different century, but boy, do they provide wonderful guides in terms of the qualities and character that are appropriate for Newton, and supporting the growth of a regionally competitive knowledge sector employment hub. This is kind of back to, I think, the extraordinary opportunity that Newton has to help host our region's innovation economy. So there are certain, and I'm going to finish up here, and these talk about the site, if I can get the slide to go forward, and talk about the sort of five vision principles that strike us as, if we don't meet these bars, we all haven't achieved what we could here. So first of all, a mixed-use district that is consistent with the letter and very much the spirit of your comprehensive plan. And this is, you probably know it, these are places that I've always loved about in Newton. A place that is walkable, and that means not only does it have nice streets with trees and shade, but more importantly, the kinds of activities that attract people to want to be out walking, public spaces where they run into each other and sort of hang out and engage each other, and real continuity with, for instance, Lower Falls, so that they enrich each other. A critical mass of housing to support retail restaurants, as you probably all know, because as you said, you've been looking hard at this, a critical mass of housing within walking distance really helps support unique retail, unique chefs, and helps develop a unique character that I think enriches Newton because it's not sort of a more of the same that we have too much of already. Not so much in Newton, but maybe the highways surrounding Newton. A diverse concentration of amenities and mixed uses that attract high value knowledge sector employees. This gets back to the fact that communities and companies are competing for knowledge workers. Jobs and investment follow them. We want to work with you to create a place that attracts them. Yes.
These numbers here, are they what you're envisioning here, or are they just placeholders?
This is N squared.
This is N squared total.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, please, I appreciate your question. And a public realm that spans, and this is something that I think is very important, that invites all kinds of people to come, and whether you want to kind of sit quietly under a tree and read a book, or find a place where you're going to run into your best 22 friends, places where much of Newton can gather for an event, or a few people can stroll along a main street with wonderful shops and retail and maybe even a draft food place to go and enjoy, but a place that offers a real variety of public realms that invites different kinds of us at different times of day and at different stages in our life to all want to be there together, which I think is something that the Newton Villages do a wonderful job of. Finally, I think all of this is in part about strengthening N squared, which I think is one of the really important regional economic opportunities we have. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, sir. Attorney Schlossinger? You get plenty more time. We've peppered you with too many questions. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We will get to the Latin rhetorical device known as praetorio, which is, I won't talk about something. I'm not going to tell you about the project, which is here, because we're not here to talk about it, and then I'll spend the next 2 minutes talking about what I'm not going to talk about. Northland expects to present the project to you in 2018. On the screen and in tab 9 of your booklet is a copy of the current vision, which we have been reviewing with the neighbors, community groups, the Chamber of Commerce, planning staff, members of the council, and anyone else who has expressed a willingness to meet with us. For the benefit of members of the public, I note once again that this project is not before the committee this evening, and we expect to propose something like it next year. We'll be prepared to work with the community and the city on the specific project at that time. In the interest of time, I won't go through the project in detail, other than to note... Other than to note that it is in evolution, the red spaces show areas projected for retail. The blue is 172,000 square feet of office at 156 Oak Street, and the yellow is proposed as residential use, the gray being a parking structure. The yellow with the red outline is residential over retail. The site revolves around a village square. All roads lead to the village square, and that's an open space which is designed as a community outdoor gathering spot with restaurant and retail. Main Street is this street. It is designed as a walking street for small store retail spaces within a walking path connecting Upper Falls to Needham Street to Shalmont Street neighborhood, and down to the Christina Street neighborhood, as well as opening to the Sacco Street area. The plan is to provide access from the new signalized intersection at Tower Road, a four-way intersection at Shalmont Street, a right-in, right-out along Main Street, leading to the Village Square, and Oak Street, the existing access on Oak Street. The plan is to get the cars off the street into parking, which is either under buildings or in the parking structure, to work seriously towards a complete streets concept, the bike path, to have low-rise townhouses facing the Upper Falls Greenway, to provide access points through the site to the Greenway, to create amenities at the cleaned up and improved South Meadow Brook, which is daylighted in this area, although it's in a culvert for the rest of Newton Street. And that is the general parameter of the project, which we would expect to bring forward in the future.
Is this an opportune time for Councilor Auchincloss to ask a question?
Whatever you want.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to let you finish the presentation first, so it's not an urgent question.
Okay.
Afterwards.
Okay. So, the proposal before you is to rezone these properties outlined in yellow, both sides of Needham Street, to Business 4. In tab 6 of your book, you'll see the comparison of the dimensional requirements as well as the use requirements. We referred to the uses on the first four pages. And in terms of which of the alternate zones should be used in the business district, we'll wait for the discussion from the planning department. But I think you'll find that none of the mixed-use districts are appropriate for this site. We'll go through them one by one if you want, but that's not, they all have their purposes, and it's not for this. It's not for a mixed-use center as defined in the comprehensive plan. On the whole, the business districts are very similar, with some exceptions. The major difference is that in the BU4 district, the council has the ability to grant special permits over four stories. The project will seek a height in excess of four stories, so that zone fits. I will note that we are not seeking any amendment of the text of the zone. We have accepted the Newton zoning ordinance in the form that it is in the B4 zone, and we have confirmed the project to those standards. We'll go into as much detail here on the different zones in tab 6 as you need. I would like to introduce my partner, Steve Bookbinder, to talk about the special permit request.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, planning board members. Steve Bookbinder, Mr. Schlesinger's partner and co-counsel. I'm going to very briefly address the special permit petition. The petitioner is seeking relief for additional parking for the existing office building at 156 Oak Street, which contains approximately 172,000 square feet. This is on what we refer to as Parcel 1. There's on-site parking for Parcel 1, which is shown here in yellow. The petitioner is seeking to have added parking to serve that office building on what's known as Parcel 2, which is shown here in gray. Now, the latter is an accessory lot, as Mr. Schlesinger noted, is a non-accessory lot, and that's not permitted in the zone. As the chairman also noted, that problem could be obviated if we were to combine the lots. However, we still need special permit relief for the parking facility in various forms. Section 5.1.4 sets forth the requirements for office buildings. We essentially need 537 stalls. We come out short of that number. We're proposing 453 stalls, so we need a parking waiver for the difference of 84 stalls. There's a combination of pre-existing parking as well as new parking. All of the new parking, both on the accessory lot and the non-accessory lot, will conform to the provisions of the zoning ordinance. Some of the pre-existing parking on Parcel 1 is non-conforming. We believe that we have enough spaces to serve the needs. With respect to the relief requested, Alan, if you just scoot to the next slide, and I'll run through this very quickly. We need the parking waiver for 84 stalls. We need permission to utilize parking on a separate lot unless we were to merge the lots, as the chairman has suggested. We need relief for parking within the setbacks. The 314 newly constructed stalls on Parcel 1 and Parcel 2 will be in compliance with the dimensional requirements. The zoning review memorandum dated May 9, 2017, and the planning department memorandum dated June 9, 2017 indicate that the existing stalls are grandfathered. However, to the extent that it's necessary, we would need dimensional requirements for some of those stalls. We need relief for the entrance and exit drive pursuant to section 5.1.8.2. We need a waiver of the perimeter screening requirements for parking facilities, as well as the interior landscaping requirements and the 1-foot candle lighting requirements. So all of those are kind of the customary and usual waivers one might seek for a parking facility. The planning department report, as you'll note, is supportive of the special permit relief, including the waiver of the 84 stalls. The planning department has requested that we provide a traffic impact and access study. There is a traffic memorandum prepared by VHB, which is included in your materials. It is found at tab 11. VHB has studied this matter and concluded that the traffic impact will be negligible because there is no real increase in site generation. It's an existing office building. We're not increasing the scope of that. Further, they've indicated that the on-site parking will be improved as a result of the single integrated scheme.
I think Councilor Schwartz had a question.
Sure. I'm sorry, I could wait, but it just occurred to me. Isn't the current office building pretty much underfilled or empty?
Yeah, there's one tenant remaining, as I understand it correctly.
Yeah,
one small tenant.
So you're saying that the delta in traffic of what's currently allowed to what would be allowed under this would not be much different, but what might be currently going on the ground is definitely separate.
Absolutely correct, and thank you for clarifying that point. I should note, again, that one of the curb cuts on Eden Street will be closed, and there is going to be an additional access egress via Tower Road, so we think that the flow of traffic on-site is going to be greatly improved. We have been asked by the planning department about on-site snow storage. I got some information to the planning department today, and we will get them additional information on lighting, and that really completes the special permit.
Can I ask you a couple questions about
Sure.
the special permit?
Sure.
The two parcels you're talking about that you're seeking to rezone are owned by affiliated entities, is that right?
That's correct.
So if you merge those two parcels, which you're planning to do if you go forward with the entire project, all you need from us is a special permit for the parking, right?
Right, so the wage area float is, that's correct.
Okay, and so let me ask you this. Assuming we don't, make an assumption, we don't get the zoning change you're seeking, how can we best accommodate your desire to get a special permit to accommodate the parking for this project?
You could ask us to merge the two lots and then grant a special permit relief for the various parking waivers.
And it's just so I have a sense of time for the committee and what our tasks are, how critical time-wise is it for you to get that parking done in the next 3 months, 6 months, in order to get the building up and running?
6 months would be great.
So if by the end of the calendar year, just again, I want colleagues to be thinking about schedule, by the end of the calendar year, regardless of what we do in the zoning relief, if we can act on the special permit, that will give you the time you need from a business point of view?
Yes, it would, Mr. Chairman.
I'm going to just go a little ahead of myself, but one thing perhaps the Vice Chair and I will talk about is maybe we try to deal with the special permit relief separately, leaving aside the zone change, because it seems to me that's really very different than the zone change relief you're talking about. Frankly, something that we do, as you know, far more routinely, and if indeed, as you say, it is something that there's not a lot there, something that we could do fairly expeditiously. Just putting that out there, and I'll be consulting with the Vice Chair about scheduling. But I had Councillor Albright, then Yates, and I'm sure others. Go ahead, please.
Can I just ask you a question about the parking? So, is this parking arrangement a temporary arrangement until the rest of the project evolves?
Yes, great question. I'm sorry to make that clear, but it is temporary. I think that's one of the reasons that the planning department was comfortable with the various waivers, because at the end of the day, we'll come out with the final project.
Okay. So at the end of the day, all of these things about giving waivers for the barrier buffer and all that is ridiculous because it's not going to be what it is now.
That's exactly correct.
Okay, got it. Just wanted to
thank you.
Councilor Yates?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm still not clear that this building has been used for office space for a considerable amount of time, and I assume that people who work in that building park in many of the locations that are being proposed, so I'm not quite sure why those aren't just existing non-conforming parking spaces, so why do you need any of this?
If you could, Attorney Bookbinder, it's a fair question about, you had a building that was full or nearly full previously.
Sure.
Why the need for the change now?
Sure. Well, there's been some physical changes at the site. We'll be taking down two buildings and also another concrete pad. And when the new parking is put in place, Councilor Yates, that new parking really should follow the requirements of the zoning ordinance in terms of interior screening and the like. The older spaces are grandfathered, but the new spaces are held to a different standard.
But you just said in answer to one other question that these are temporary spaces, so I don't get it. They're changing, but they're new? Or?
No, some are pre-existing and some are new. They're being reconfigured.
So maybe I can try to help clarify here. You had a building which had a certain amount of occupancy in it.
That's correct.
And do you need, and are you looking to increase the occupancy or not?
No, it's the same 172,000 square feet.
So I guess I'm asking, I have the same question Councilor Yates does. What triggers the need for additional parking?
Sure. Previously, the parking was scattered in several different places on the site. Now that we've made changes to the site and some buildings are coming down, it made sense to take not only this existing parking which serves the building, but to take this area here, which is not available today, and consolidate parking which used to occur at different places and put it all here next to the building.
So you have enough parking on site to accommodate the building, but you're trying to relocate the parking?
We don't meet the requirements of the zoning ordinance, Mr. Chairman. We're short. We're short on the requirements of the zoning ordinance, but we feel we have more than enough as a practical matter. I know you're familiar with that position.
I'll go back to Councilor Yates and Councilor Crosley. Did you have a hand up?
Yeah.
Councilor Yates?
Yeah, I do recall that under the previous ownership, the site was the site of numerous successful requests for demolition permits for, I guess, for the buildings you're planning to knock down for your accessory or non-accessory, but it still seems kind of a stretch to actually need that. But let me ask you something else that's more on point. You folks did make presentations on this to the Upper Falls Neighborhood Advisory Committee, and the unanimous consensus, as I recall it, was that the council didn't want any of the new traffic generated by this site to be coming out onto Oak Street, that everything should be, the site should be accessed exclusively off of Needham Street. Is what you're proposing in line with that, or what's the story?
In terms of the temporary parking, which we were discussing, currently all of the parking for the Clark's building, the former Clark's building, which was occupied until December 2016, 100% of it came out this way, onto Oak Street, the only access. The new proposal is to split that between coming out Oak Street and coming out Tower Road with a passkey provision. So that is, by splitting the traffic between Oak Street and Tower Road, that is the basis on which the traffic report, which you had indicated that the special permit will generate a lesser degree of traffic on Oak Street than prior when in December of 16 when Clark's was occupied. Now, in terms of the ultimate building project, I do not recall, my recollection is different from yours. I do recall my good friend Mr. Neville, who is probably here to reiterate the point, saying that he would prefer that there be no traffic coming out onto Oak Street, and we have not agreed to that. It is a critical part of the new project that there be access into and from the neighborhood.
It wasn't just him, it was everybody. Councilor Yates, I appreciate that. Let's hold question. Councilor Crosley?
Not too much to add. I think I want to reiterate some of what Councilor Albright said, which is, you know, I think we need to be looking at this as a temporary plan and to have possibly sufficient parking scattered throughout a site, which is really a mess. The various parcels is far less attractive to any new tenant than having parking, you know, close to the building, and there's plenty of room to do it for however many years it takes for us to agree with the petitioner about a future project. So I just am hoping that we can look at it in that light. Obviously, everybody's interested in the long-term vision. I am too, but I think it's so long-term at this point. I think there's a lot of work to be done, a lot of challenges to be met, and I'm just hoping we can look at this, what they're asking for right now, and do we think this is beneficial? Do we want them to be successful in pulling in a good large tenant to anchor this project and this building?
Can I follow up on what Councillor Crosley just said with a question for the legal department? Could we grant a special permit which had a duration of years? Could we grant a special permit for parking that had a duration of years and expired?
There are always difficulties about putting a durational limitation in a special permit, and that's something we've raised in other special permits as well. So I'd have to think about whether there'd be a creative way of doing it, but normally I would say no.
If it was something that the petitioner was agreeable to, would that make a difference?
Yes.
We'll have to think about it. I can see all kinds of issues that can create in terms of financing and other things. I just wanted to make two other quick points. I've been advised by the team that we actually are creating some new entrances into that building which will dovetail with that parking area shown in gray. And also Peter just advised me, Clark's at its optimum was about 120,000 square feet of the 172, so we're really looking to bring in more tenants in a mix, but not exceeding the 172.
The suggestion for the special permit of a limited duration is to try to be helpful to you.
No, I understand.
You just articulated to Councilor Albright in response to a question that you view this as a temporary fix while you go about resolving the whole site, and what I'm trying to suggest is a mechanism that gets you the temporary fix, gets you that done very quickly in this process. You don't have to obviously decide it tonight, but if you can give it some thought, I think Councilors Crosley and Albright are trying to be helpful here.
Oh, no. No question. I think you all are. We just need to think about the implications.
All right. Councilor Kalis, and then Schwartz, and then Yates.
To make sure I get this, because currently the building, you say that it is, I think there's one tenant. It's partially vacant. So, mostly vacant. So you're saying you need the parking because you're going to attract new tenants.
Yes.
Okay. And then, Councilor Crossley, so what you just mentioned made me think, in doing this, you kind of tied it to the project that they just went through. In some ways, are we committing to that project by doing this ahead of time? That's a concern of mine.
I think that's a fair concern. I would think not if we craft it the right way so it's either limited duration or something else, but that's something we're going to need to hear from the planning department and the legal department on to understand the ramifications of it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
All right, Councilor Schwartz and Yates.
Thank you, sir. So two questions were raised in my mind about the parking request, and I'm sorry, I don't understand it entirely. So if it's an MU1, as it currently is, and doesn't change to BU1, what are the requirements parking-wise? Are some of these requirements generated by the change in zone? Because I understand the zoning memorandum says that it's assuming if it's a BU4, but if this state is an MU1, would you still need some parking waivers?
Yes. The zone only comes into play in terms of the relief sought to have non-accessory parking, off-site parking to serve the building. As the chairman suggested, if you were to merge these lots so that it was just in one lot, that goes away. All the other parking requirements, the dimensional requirements, interior screening and the like, they stay the same.
Well, the grandfather, though, gets lost, and you have to update those.
Some of them stay the same, some of them are grandfathered, but others, and it's generally been the position of the Cities and Special Services Department, that where you do a new parking facility, that ought to comply with the current rules and regulations. What's already there may be deemed to be grandfathered, even if it doesn't meet current standards.
Even if you merge.
Yeah, I think I don't want to speak for the law department, but I think if it's currently there, my sense is they're going to find that's pre-existing, that's grandfathered, but anything new, you have to meet the regulations.
So would it be fair, just the flip side, would it be fair to say that the current parking situation, if overnight, or if maybe even a couple of years ago, you had full occupancy of that business, of the 172 1,000 square foot building, would you have been in compliance or no?
I think it would have all been deemed to be grandfathered. Much of it would be non-conforming, but it would have predated zoning in most cases.
So the triggering event is that you want to demolish the buildings on Parcel 2, which then generates the need for the waivers.
And putting in a new parking facility.
And the reason why I'm sorry, again, I'm being a little dense, but the reason why you need to put in the new parking facility, part of it was to consolidate it. I understand that.
We're trying to attract some high-level tenants and fill that building up. The current configuration is not the most desirable. If you can create this new parking, have it right next to the building,
that's the main reason.
This is a huge help.
Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, and they're anxious to get moving on that.
Gotcha.
Because we know it's going to be a couple of years for the rest of this to get sorted out.
And the hope, and just if you, please just indulge me one more moment. So the hope the reason why you're trying to attract a tenant, other than good business, is if you can get a good tenant there, they might be able to stay as an anchor to the whole future project.
Absolutely, positively.
Okay, I understand now. Thank you.
So before I get to Councilor Yates, I understand that if you consolidate the parcel, you don't need the zone change for the parking, but you need a special permit. And to attract this anchor tenant, you don't need a zone change either. You can put them in there as a matter of right.
Yes, I believe that's correct.
Okay. Councilor Yates?
Yes. There is currently on Needham Street a driveway that leads to the right of 156 Oak Street. There is a great deal of parking that is to the right-hand side of 156 Oak Street, beyond where the piano mill is. So why can't that existing driveway be used for access to the site?
We intend to close it.
Why?
It's really an intent to consolidate curb cuts and make for better traffic flow. That's just one more interruption, if you will, along.
That's part of the final project. I mean, you're mixing here a little bit, aren't you?
No, we're planning to close that curb cut as part of the renovation of the office building.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Just so we're clear. Councilor Crosley?
Why? Thank you. Actually, is there a tie-in here to the what is, I think, going to now be the beginning of 2019 when the Needham Street corridor is redone by the state, and that's supposed to start in early 2019? Are you all coordinating with that, and has that been discussed with DOT?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I mean, I understand it because that curb cut is very close to the intersection that we're just about to see.
Yeah, it's not ideal in its current configuration.
Yeah.
One second, Councilor Crosley and Councilor Yates. It'll be like point counterpoint. Go ahead.
At the same time, I understand there's like layers of complexity here, except that there's one thing that's before us now, which is about this, about getting the right tenant for this building and serving them with the right parking. And I don't think it's, you know, nothing commits us to a future project. I just want to say that because even if we granted the zone change for the entire five parcels, we still get to decide on whatever the special permit project is, as Mark very emphatically, I'm sorry, Councilor Laredo very emphatically said at the beginning of the meeting. And that's important for us always to keep in mind. But I do, not only does it make sense to me to have a newly laid out and striped parking area in order to help attract the tenant, but also, and bringing it close to the site, but that we know there is this much larger site and there is the beginnings of a vision for it. And, you know, I think it makes sense to leave the rest of that site alone. In one case, if we agree that the structured parking should go in the middle of the site, for example, that might, you know, ultimately this project is going to have to be phased. It's too big to be done at once. So I think it makes sense to pull all this as close to the building as possible, even though it's temporary.
Councilor Yates, did you want to say anything? Councilor Schwartz?
The Councilor Cross's comments made me realize that ultimately, if the project, the final project is built as described so far, the area of the current parking that we're currently discussing would be that green space?
It would change. This parking configuration would change.
So that'll be the last part of that whole thing?
I can't say it'll be the last part, but it will be your part.
I guess that would be my concern. I mean, it shouldn't affect our decision tonight, but if this is where all the parking is going to be until the project is near complete, then you're not going to have a green space for a long time.
Correct.
Okay.
I'm going to respectfully suggest for my colleagues, but I want to get your sense of this. You know what, before I do that, let me get some public comment. We've had people who've been waiting patiently for well over an hour. We'll then have an opportunity to talk more. Remember, we have Kessler Woods tonight. We are going to finish by 10. And Kessler will be significant. I know I want to make sure Planning Development Board has an opportunity to ask questions, too.
May we finish, Mr. Chairman?
I Thought you're done. What do you have left, Attorney Schlesinger?
We are asking that the committee take its time and deliberate. Attached as tab 10 in your book is a proposed schedule that we would ask to consider the various issues. We understand that the planning director is proposing to engage a consultant and a working group, both of which we support. At the same time, we think it is a matter of proactive planning that the issues be discussed directly by this committee and the planning board, and that we can provide discussion of what the comprehensive plan calls the yellow flags of issues to be discussed. These presentations can go hand in hand with the planning department's process. We ask for those dates if possible.
Let me be really clear on that right now. Councilor Schwartz and I are the chair and vice chair of this committee. We will consult with the committee clerk. We set this committee's schedule. We set when we take up things and don't take up things. We'll decide when it gets heard and when it doesn't get heard. It is rather unusual, I think, for a petitioner to suggest to us what our hearing schedule should be. And I'll add that the planning department, we very much appreciate their input. We'll look forward to their input. We want their input. And the planning department will provide input to us. If you want to convene, and you have already, you want to convene folks to talk about the zoning change, you want to talk about the stakeholders, that's something as a petitioner is quite appropriate for you to do. I'm sure you've been doing it already, and I'll encourage you to do it going forward.
I think that perhaps a good place to start in your review would be to schedule some dates for a site visit. And we'd like to ask the committee if you would be willing to do that. And I think that we've got a lot to do here. We would like to work with the committee in a proactive manner to consider what is the vision of the city for Needham Street and this big parcel in particular. And we'd like to do it. We'd like to ask that the matter be considered by the end of the year. It's a perfectly appropriate request for the rezoning, and we would ask that you consider it, and we will be happy to participate.
I suggest to you, Attorney Schlesinger, that what your vision for the site is critically important. What the city's vision for Needham Street is critically important. We'd love to have the city's vision for Needham Street. Your vision for the site, I think, is your vision. And respectfully, we are going to need to hear much more than we've heard tonight about what your vision is as we go forward. Councilor Clausen.
Mr. Chairman and the rest of the committee, and I'd be happy to hear from the rest of the committee or council, this is an area I am intimately familiar with. And I honestly, there's a lot of challenges here. There's a lot to be concerned about until we have more information, but there's also a lot of opportunity. And I would love for this to be a collaborative, an open and collaborative process, and not feel like a hostile process. I don't take anything in this book, which I think is an extensive piece of work, as demanding of a vision. I see it as asking us what we see for the corridor, what we see for the site. We say a lot of things in here, but the truth is we don't have a master plan for the Needham Street corridor. The city has become, named itself as part of the N-squared district, but has not achieved very much relative to our neighbor to date. This is the one-at-a-time projects have come forward, and we've dealt with them as best we can. Most of them are small, with the exception of the Nexus is probably going to be the most transformative one to date. But this gives us an opportunity. This may not be the exact process. These may not be the exact topics. They may not be the exact dates. But it gives, I think it's an olive branch to say, you know, here's an idea for how we could move through this conversation to get the council's input and the city's input on what we want for this parcel. I think it's right to start with a concept that shows a vision. If you don't have anything on paper, we're just, you know, everybody has a different image in their mind. But I don't expect that specific concept plan, which has been floating around there for a very long time now. I don't expect it's going to look exactly like that when it's filed. And I just want to take this opportunity to say, at least from my point of view, I would like to engage in a process like this openly as part of the public process where all the public gets to hear and participate. I know they've been out in the community. We always ask people to do that. They've done it extensively. But now is our chance to really engage.
I appreciate that, Councilor Cosio. Remind us, however, that as a land use committee, we sit in a quasi-judicial function, and we have to be cognizant of that. So it's nice for that, and frankly, we depend on the planning department to be our eyes and ears, our review of what a petitioner presents to us with an objective view. Councilor Taylor.
So, Councilor Crossley, I couldn't agree with you more in terms of the feeling and the openness and transparency and wanting to work with the petitioner. I haven't been involved in many of these in land use, so I'm kind of speaking out of school, but I agree with what you're saying. I guess when I read through all of the materials, and I hear what you're saying, Attorney Schlesinger, with, and I'm not really going to talk about the project because the project isn't before us at all, but in some ways it is, and in some ways I do know that it's transformative. So I have to react to the project as well in that this is so large, so impactful, yet the way that I feel that you're looking at it is very myopic in terms of Upper Falls only. There are multiple neighborhoods that you're going to impact. There are multiple traffic zones that you're going to impact. There are multiple schools you're going to impact. The major impacts, none of them are really referenced here. And I understand they can't be really, but it's hard for me to separate because you're just looking for zoning now. But I want you to know that I'm looking for more so we can be collaborative. I want the acknowledgement that, yes, this is going to affect Winchester. This is going to affect Charlemont. This is going to affect other areas, that you're thinking broadly. I mean, you've had some reach out with community. I'd like to know what they've said, what the community that you've heard, and where the changes have been so thus far. I haven't seen anything in my community. I'm right near there. Already I have constituents talking and asking me about it, and they'd love to provide feedback, and they will. But there are so many tentacles to this that I need to feel that you're looking at all of those, and for the planning department as well. I have to echo what the chair said, because I know in the past...
Councilor Lennon? I think Councilor Kalis is trying to address the planning department.
I know in the past the planning department comes out with an opinion that tends to... Well, in many cases, be very positive, be very rosy, or I haven't heard one that's actually not. And granted, I haven't been part of this group, but there's a lot of questions here. You know, I was looking for the planning department's opinion on the zone change and how it affects the future project and implications, and I didn't see that. And I really want fair and balanced opinions from the planning department to really help and guide us here, because we can't take this, accept the project just as it is, I don't think. We have to leverage your expertise.
Couldn't agree more. And I would refer back to the stakeholder engagement that you talked about. I think that's critical moving forward in determining what is appropriate for this site, and I think that's what we're suggesting here, that to suggest an analysis of the zone change at this point without really doing a full examination of the issues involving the stakeholders would be premature. I just want to interject here. There's a little bit of process I think we have to be cognizant of, which is we are the authority that is going to decide the zone change. If you as the planning department, who technically works under the mayor, want to convene a working group to advise the planning department on its opinion, you're free to do that. But you can't mix under our charter what you're trying to do with a working group and our job as a city council in terms of making a decision. We don't have working groups when it comes to zoning changes or land use. So
So if you want to convene something to inform you, you can do that, but it can't and shouldn't replace what we do in this chamber.
I'm not suggesting that at all, actually. I'm suggesting that we undertake that process, and when we come back and when the developer comes back, we've gained a lot of necessary groundwork to get this thing a lot further along.
Respectfully, it is their job to present the project, and it's not adversarial, Councillor Crosby, but it does respect the different roles here. We need you to advise us on their request for a zone change using your best professional judgment.
I'd like to be in the position of advising you that we were part of the process, so we understood that there was full stakeholder engagement and there was some guidance along the way, so that we were part of that conversation as opposed to not being part of that conversation. That's all I'm suggesting.
I think that let others weigh in, and I'll certainly defer to others later on, but we as a city council are charged with a mission of determining zone change or non-zone change. Your job, and a critical one, because we rely so much on your expertise, is to advise us. If we get to a point where, under the planning department auspices, we're convening a group meeting to essentially make decisions, that's not the way we're supposed to do it. So however you think you need to be informed to advise us is quite appropriate, but I think we need to be very careful here about understanding our role as an elected body and our role as a council. President Lennon?
No, I only just wanted to reiterate that, and that's what we were talking about, and Barney, that's what I was coming up to chat with you about, that maybe the law department could help craft what that is, because I think many members of the council know that historically the working groups have been advisory to the mayor. We've been asked to participate in a number of them for a variety of reasons to provide that insight and guidance from our side. This is a little different, so I guess I understand the intent. I do understand the intent, but I think that we need to be careful how we craft it, and would probably look for some guidance from the law department on that to accomplish what they feel they need to accomplish with all the stakeholder input. So.
Councilor Lipoff and Schwartz, I'm sorry, Albright is patient. Go ahead. Albright and Lipoff and Schwartz and Crosby.
So I want to start by saying that this petitioner has brought us an amazing opportunity. That did not go unnoticed. This is a part of the town that could use some work, and here's some work that they want to do for us, and it could be wonderful. What's awkward is, you know, Councillor Cross has been talking for years about the need for master planning, and there are several sections of the city that are crying out for master planning. Some pinch points that, you know, the Washington Street Corridor, this is an obvious one, the Newtonville, Newton Center, and so forth. So we have a bit of an awkward situation because we don't have the master planning, but we have a petitioner who's ready to do a project. And yet we have a land use committee who has a quasi-judicial function to perform and really can't do the master planning itself. So I think what this requires is a sit down with the planning department and with the law department and with the representatives of this committee and sort of work out what this process is going to be. How will that master planning happen in a way that can inform this committee and this project and not, you know, get into the problems that we are a land use committee with a quasi-judicial function. But I don't think we can decide that tonight. I think it's going to take some conversation.
Excellent idea. Certainly, Councilor Schwartz and I, as your appointed chairs and vice chairs, I think that's a role that we have. And then we need to report back to you because you then have to decide whether you like it or not.
Right.
Councilor Lipoff, Schwartz, who else did I miss?
Go ahead. Exactly, Councilor Albright. Exactly. That's what I wanted to say, and I'll take it a step further. We can't always. But the reason why this master planning doesn't always happen is because there's so many variables, there's so many different things you can do. The city never wants to step out and say, this is what I can see. We are at a point now where we have a petitioner who's saying, this is what I can see. And we have a parcel. The petition is bigger than everything we've ever done. And it requires a bigger investigation. And the planning department, I think, is now ready with all of the reports we've done in the past on Needham Street to now at this time say, okay, you know, let's take till now, the end of the year, whenever, to look holistically at Needham Street with this specifically in front of us to figure out how this fits in to the entire corridor. So I think we're at that point where we can really do this work if you want to do.
Councilor Schwartz? Peter, I'm sorry.
I'm just going to join the chorus. I do agree with Councilor Albright and Councilor Lipoff. I think there is something very special about this particular opportunity, also somewhat fraught opportunity because it is a challenge of our role, and the sequencing is very challenging because usually with special permits we have that quasi-judicial role. We don't want to be basically saying to a developer, this is what I will support, make these changes. At the same time, we are talking about a zone change, which in my understanding is a non-judicial, purely policy role. So I think that there is, if we can chart that and follow the, whether it's a tightrope or a nice wide open channel, as guided by the legal department, I think that there can be a lot of input that we have in guiding what happens not only in this one parcel, this, you know, this big set of parcels, but on Needham Street in general. I guess my last thing that I would leave the petitioner with is I would just share with you my hope that nothing is set in stone, because it's otherwise a lot of work simply to ratify what you've already decided you want to do there. So I hope that there's some flexibility and openness to this effort, because it's going to be a lot of person hours and a lot of efforts on the part of the community to kind of feed back about what we're looking for here, what the challenges are here, and if there's no flexibility or a very limited amount of flexibility in what your vision is, then that's going to be a problem for me.
Well, I think you understand the process. If I may, Mr. Chairman, very briefly, I am loath to disagree with you, Mr. Chairman, but this is a 100% legislative function. It is not a quasi-judicial
in
the zone change.
The zoning change
is a legislative function where you are entitled to participate as you will. As a matter of fact, I would say under the city charter, you are to participate in the zone.
Except your problem here, Attorney Schlesinger, is we all know that this is a single petitioner seeking a single zoning change for a single group of parcels that it controls or owns, and once that zoning change is made, plans and putting up and seeking a special permit for a very large project.
I understand that that's what, this is a legislative procedure. We have put it forward to you. We came here for just this reason. There are vacant tabs in the book.
So,
housing, and fiscal impact.
Attorney Schlesinger, are you saying that we as a committee should be working on a blank slate where you have no vision for what you want to put here?
No, what I'm saying is that I agree with the planning director's comment for Councilor Kalis. He says that the planning department recognizes site lends itself to redevelopment as a mixed-use development, and generally agrees that the current mixed-use one zoning, although it allows for limited residential commercial uses, is dated and inappropriate for the site. So that's what Bonnie said.
We
agree with that.
We can probably all agree on that.
If we can agree with that, then we can agree that there should be a different zone. If we can agree that there should be a different zone, then we are discussing what zone should it be. And I think that's the discussion that this legislature and the planning board should take upon itself. We would like to do that in
the
6 months.
The problem is, Attorney Bookbinder, you've urged this particular zone because you have a particular plan in mind.
No question, but I'm not the disposer. I'm the proposer. By the way, he's Bookbinder.
You're interchangeable at this point. You've had this for 30 years. We've worked well together. I like both of you. You do a great job for your clients.
The reason that we've gotten along for 40 years is that we've never had to work together before.
Well, we're going to see how we test you here. They do function well together, I'm sure. Hold on just a second. Councilor Cody, who hasn't spoken yet, then Councilor Crosley, then the President, then Councilor Ripoff. I've got to let the folks here go. You know what, before I go to you, Peter, your board has been more than patient. Go ahead, please. I'm sorry, Councilor Cody, but they've been more than patient. I've been neglectful.
This was a comment. I agree with Councilor Crosley in regards that this is a unique opportunity in the sense of it's huge and ambitious project. I do think that we would need to synchronize the planning of this project with the city and the city's all the different aspects like transportation, all the services, schools. I think it seems to me that it has two different paces where the city and we're behind, and this project is already forward and making a little bit of planning. Who knows if stepping over the city's work. I would be happy to help in whatever ideas or projects or teams there are for this. And I think it's just a problem of synchronization. A matter of
anyone else from the Planning Development Board?
I just had a quick question about your diagram. I believe it's in 9. Tab 9, are you guys smoothing out the dog leg at Needham and Oak Street?
Yes, that project will be underway in fiscal 2018. That's a separate project from Needham Street. The state has taken the land there and is going to straighten out the Christina Street, Oak Street intersection. Councilor Crosby knows more about that.
Actually, it's supposed to begin in a week or so.
Yes.
That intersection work.
The Oak Christina is immediate. Right.
But that's city work, just to be clear, right? Or state?
State.
It's not the developer. I think that was misunderstood.
I believe Attorney Schlesinger, that when you last appeared before the planning board on this project, that we had a discussion that might be helpful to some of these of the zoning issues, which was, as I recall, you were going to prepare a zoning options chart showing what various parking arrangements and other areas where you're looking for special permits would be affected or would be possible under different BU zones. And maybe that would give us, a little bit better sense of what could be accomplished by merging lots, by going BU3, BU4, whatever.
The petitioner does not desire to merge the lots. That would be disadvantageous for them in a series of ways. In tab 6 of the book, we did copy the sections of the zoning ordinance, both for the business and the mixed use, and prepared in the text some of the comparison of the uses. We did not go through this project, for example, with how it would compare to any of them. I think the relevant piece in this, as we said in the narrative, is that most of the uses in the business zones are comparable. The difference is that the Business 4 district is the only one that allows a special permit for a height in excess of 4 stories.
Peter, any other questions by your
No, I think we're done and ready to hear the public comments.
Right. Why don't we do this? Before I take some comments from my colleagues, I'd like to just get members of the public to be heard. It's 9:15 and many folks have been waiting patiently. Is there any member of the public who wish to be heard this evening on this petition? Come on up, please, sir. Anybody else after that? Public hearing stays open. Mr. Coote, after you. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. I'm Jack Neville from Newton Upper Falls. I've been a resident of Upper Falls for over 50 years. Been a long time, been a lifetime Newton resident. My family immigrated to Upper Falls in the 1890s. I'm only here for one reason, is to protect Upper Falls, and I think it's a traffic problem. And the opening on Oak Street is really an unnecessary option that the Northland wants to do. I'm not against Northland, I'm not against the development. That is one of my biggest issues. I've been fighting, at one time they wanted to extend Tower Road right into the village. I mean, that would kill us. Where the exit on Oak Street is now, if you take a right out of the parking lot, which that was a parking lot which only the clock shoe used. When they got out of work, they came to work, don't go down there. You take a right out of that parking lot, three cars are at the intersection. It's a four-way intersection, you got a satellite, it's bedlam. Now, they're proposing in their plan, their master plan, that also I'm on the area council up there. I've been to every meeting they've offered. Now, they're proposing three exits on Needham Street, which I think is sufficient. I was surprised tonight they said they were going to close that one behind the piano mill because they said they were going to add one to make Main Street. So I don't know where that road's going to be. And what the master plan says that they proposed was Tower Road was going to come off Needham Street back and then come out onto Oak Street. So you just can't have a road that empties into the village of Upper Falls. That's where the depot is, stores, Gainwell, the pizza place. It's a small area. It's the only part of Upper Falls is Oak Street, Chestnut Street, Route 9. I mean, it's not very big. To push all those cars in that area, I just can't see it. I think now they want temporary. Okay, if they want a temporary exit from that parking lot, and when they do the master plan, they close it. Period. Gone. No entrance, no exit. I'm all right with it. But you can't let them do that. Now, I think the project overall, will be a benefit to Upper Falls eventually, but I have got other issues, a couple, two or three others, but not serious. This is the most serious issue that will affect Upper Falls.
Okay. Thank you. Next, please. Ma'am, come on up. Ma'am. Second row, thank you. Good evening.
Ellen Pack, architect, 29-year resident of Newton, 3-year resident of Newton Upper Falls, which is Huntsalov. I'm not going to be prescriptive, just descriptive. Again, with this opening onto Oak Street, we had a foretaste of additional traffic with the closure of Elliott Street Bridge for 6 months. I live on William Street, a block from this project, literally, and while overall I think it will be wonderful, and it is a wonderful opportunity, one of my major issues is with this presumed access onto Oak Street. When the Elliott Bridge was closed, we had met much additional traffic. And from Abbott, from Abbott, Staco, and William Street, it's all empty out onto Oak Street, and they are dead end. They end at the Charles River. You can't get out any other way. We could not make a left turn onto Oak Street during rush hour unless some kind person stopped and let us make the left turn. That's it. So we've already had a taste of what this means. And I also would say about temporary things, they have a way of becoming permanent. So I see this temporary parking situation as kind of a backdoor way of maybe establishing something that could become permanent. Why not dead end the parking at, why not have the ingress at Tower Road and dead end it? What's the plow? you could access the parking that way. Because we've already had a taste of this, and it wasn't pretty. I think there are other ways to handle this. And you might think, traffic calming things like speed bumps and what have you, those are imperfect solutions. And we're really trapped there, as I said, on Abbott, Williams, and Staple Street. There's a bus stop for elementary school children at Williams and Oak, because there's no elementary school in Upper Falls, because they're bused to countryside school. So that's there twice a day during the school year. So Oak Street, for that stretch, is really quite a busy little place. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Scoot, come on up. Anybody else this evening, remember the public hearing is going to be open. We're going to be here at least several more times. Good evening.
Thank you. My name is John Coates. I live at 430 Winchester Street, which is about a half mile from the Marshall's Mall and this site. Obviously, I have a lot of things I would like to say about the site, but since the focus tonight is on the zoning, I think that what both of the two previous speakers said and what I think we all know is that there's a serious problem with the infrastructure, by which I mean the streets, surrounding this whole property. And we know that the level of service on Needham Street is often at level D or F, particularly at rush hour. It is similar to that on Oak Street and Christina Street. And the whole problem with requesting the change of zone to be U4, or MU4 for that matter, is that what they really want is to increase the density of development on the site. And that's precisely what the site and the infrastructure cannot take. So yes, if you want to change it to BU1 or BU2, I think I could go along with that, because that would allow you to have your retail, your commercial on the ground floor, you can have your residential on the next three floors, but that would be it. Talking about wanting to go to 8 stories on this site, where the traffic is already so abysmal, it would be laughable, but it's already gotten this far. So we'll not talk further right now about the lack of public transportation or how far it is to the Green Line. But for sure, this is not an appropriate site for a multi-story development beyond 4 stories. Thank you.
To anyone else this evening, I'm not going to take any more public comment this evening. Public hearing remains open. I know I have two or three more colleagues. Councilor Cody has been very patient. I think there's a couple others. We're going to hold this item this evening because we have Tesla Woods to take up. Councilor Schwartz and I will meet with Ms. Kahn. I do not expect we will be taking this up until September. We have two meetings in this summer. I know we have a full plate already on the 11th of July. We have things already in August as well. And we have several projects that we're hearing later this month, including, I think, Sunrise and others. That we're going to need to carry, and maybe Tesla Woods that we're going to need to try to take up in August. So I think September is the earliest. But I don't have a date yet. We have some moving pieces for September because of Jewish holidays. And again, the Vice Chair and I will sit down with Ms. Kahn and try to schedule everything in a fashion that's appropriate given all of our other concerns. Councilor Coder, then Auchincloss, and I don't know if I missed anyone else.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well,
Mr. President, of course.
Mr. President. So just piggybacking a little bit on Councilor Schwartz's early comments about this great opportunity. So this is an excellent opportunity for the city and for the residents of Newton. And I think one of the things that I felt when I first came on, since I'm in my second term, is I was very surprised when big projects came along that the planning department wasn't in front of it and the city administration wasn't in front of these projects, and we would be surprised, and the neighborhoods would be surprised. So there was a lot of distress out there. So we went through that on Crescent Street, Rose Street, and other places like that over the first part of my coming out to the city council. So I think this is a great opportunity now that we have to look forward and be future thinking here to start paying attention to revenue sources, commercial base, and everything else. I think this project shows a lot of that, so I'm encouraged by that. So one thing, this is more for planning, and my colleagues, just as a heads up, with the highway access, lack of stress on the city of Newton, there's like three major areas that we have opportunity with. One is this area right here, since they've identified it with 28 acres for some kind of development that's using more highway and not running people through the city. And then we also have Riverside, which we know is a project that's been on the table for a while. And then the other third area I look at is Comm Ave, where you get off the exits right there. There's a lot of possibilities in that area. So I would encourage planning to be in front of some of this. These areas right here, because as we look at budget, revenue for our budget and everything else, we have to look at where can we put big commercial, where can we put mixed-use development, and have high access and limited stress to the city residents of Newton, and those would be the kind of areas I would look towards for that. So rather than compressing traffic through the city, it comes in by the highways. So as I see this project moving forward and planning getting involved and possibly some groups forming up to help out, I'd also like to view that we look at this in the context from a land use perspective and planning probably more so, that they view those three big areas of the highway access as consistent with something we should be looking at in the future. Because I think the surprise element that we had in the past is very distressing for a lot of the residents, which was my big discovery coming on the City Council. Thank you for your time.
Councilor Auchincloss, thank you, Councilor Cody. Councilor Auchincloss, Lennon, Crosley, I don't know if I missed anyone else. All set? I don't think you've spoken before, which is why I'm letting you go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Three broad comments for the petitioner to dwell on over the summer, since I know part of why you came here was to get kind of hot takes from the City Council. I share what most of my colleagues said. I do think this is exciting. Number one, what Mr. Coates said, you're going to hear about 500 more times over the next couple of years about this project. This is going to be the defining concern. It's a concern that I know my colleagues are going to share. You're going to have to come with a truly compelling transit plan for this project. It's going to have to be, not just subsidies, not just, oh, we're going to have a shuttle. It's going to have to be really compelling. So that's one takeaway I would have. Number two, I think there's no doubt that this could be an economic driver for the region. One of the things that you see when you look at other clusters that are highly successful is that they have an academic research function that anchors it. I would encourage you to think about satellite campuses from Israeli or local universities. I know that that's been studied before by the N-Square Innovation District. It would be a really interesting use case to have a small satellite campus there that could anchor it with some basic research. Number three, I'm all about bringing in the knowledge economy workers. Clearly Newton is well positioned to take advantage of that. Inclusionary zoning is going to have to be a part of this in a big way. Probably 20-25% feed restricted. We need to make sure that this is going to serve everybody in the city. And so I'd be looking for that as well. Three big comments there.
Thank you. President Lennon and Councilor Crosley.
I'm fine. I was only just going to mention at the time that you were in your exchange with Attorney Schlesinger, if we could get it back on the rails and finish up the item, seeing that it was hot and that we have a lot of people that are here waiting for another item. That was all. Thanks.
And I guess you gave me the vibe, President Lennon. We got it back eventually. Councilor Crosley.
So I'd like to underline everything that Jake said, and then I have 10 minutes. No, I'm just kidding. Jake's three points were excellent. And I want to just go back for a second to the discussion we were having about how we have our voice matter in this project. I'm going to put it that way. We haven't done this before this way, and that always shakes us up a little bit. But I also want to underline this is about determining whether or not we want to approve a zone change for a large area of this corridor as an indication of what we would like to see there. And so we have to go through every element of what we would like to see there and understand it. And so, again, it underlines what Jake's three big items were. I'll add just one more, because I think we need to understand why the mix is proposed as it is. The mix of residential to commercial is something we talk a lot about here. We talked a lot about it with smaller projects like Washington Place, but this is a big deal, and this is part of the N-squared corridor, and the exact type of commercial uses that you're thinking about, I think, matters a lot in terms of the success of the project and the transit opportunities that you need to offer more or less of. So I think it's a very exciting intellectual exercise that we're about to become part of. But because it's about a zone change right now, we can become part of it. We're not used to having that kind of conversation here in land use because we are mostly quasi-judicial and making a determination about a special permit. We also give, auto licenses and some other few other random things. But this is a big deal. And I think, I'd love for the city and the chair and co-chair to be thinking about what the calendar should look like so that we can have some of those conversations when we're not oppressed with so much other work.
So I'm just going to close this out tonight. Very helpful this dialogue. Thank you for your presentation. I'm sorry, Councilor Lipoff?
Yes, just one more thing. I came in a half an hour late, so stop me if you've already talked about this. But we're talking about a zoning change, okay? And you really want to know what that's about. It's from 1 to 2 story, no residential, or going to BU4, which will allow, by right, up to 3 stories and residential. The 8 stories is by special permit, and we have complete control over anything above 3 stories. So if you look at this zoning change and say, if you look at this parcel and say, I really envision some residential here, and I envision something different than what's on Needham Street right now, then that's what you're thinking about tonight, and that's where you're going with the zoning change. What we do with their petition and the special permit is for us to decide. But the zoning that we're going to is no more than 3 stories, but allows for mixed use.
Well, I appreciate that comment, Councilor Lipoff. I have to disagree. I view personally, and my colleagues may really disagree with me, as we often do, the zone change and what you're proposing here are interlinked. It's wonderful for us to talk in the abstract about what ought to be here, but you clearly, as a petitioner, have a vision for what you want here. And we're not talking about rezoning Needham Street. We're talking about rezoning this site, and you're asking for a certain rezone because you have a specific vision of what you want us to put in its place. So I think that for us to talk about rezone in the abstract, allow a rezone, and then have a project come in. One, I think it's going to be hard to do. Two, I'll be blunt. I don't think it's going to pass the full council. I think the full council would have some serious concerns about essentially giving any single developer a roadmap. Here, we're giving you a big zone change. You can do all this. Now just come in with a special permit. Meanwhile, we all know you have a plan because the plan's been floating out there for a year. So I for one, I'm very appreciative of the opportunity to do this. I think it's helpful. I think Councilor Crosley and Albright are right that we need to talk about vision, what do we want here. But let's not lose sight of the fact that this developer spent a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of energy on a specific plan. And we ought to be talking about what we do here in the context of that plan. And that's my view. Again, you know, the beauty of this body is that if I'm wrong, you get to tell me I'm wrong, and we go with the will of the majority. So we are going to hold this item tonight. I need a motion to hold this item. Do I have a motion to hold by Councilor Schwartz? All in favor of holding? Item's held. Councilor Schwartz and I will report back to the petitioner and to you about next steps, and we may undertake some type of process discussion at some point before we try to lie down concrete, maybe even in August, if that's an appropriate time for a process discussion. So with that, let me pick up the Kessler Woods project.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you need to adjourn? Or thank you so much. Okay, have a good night all. Thank you. Colleagues, if we could, our last item is 132-17, special permit to amend the special permit for Kessler Woods LLC. Attorney Stearns, are you, I know you're here. Why don't you tee it up? We're not going to vote this out tonight. If you could give us maybe a 15-minute presentation of what you're trying to do. I think you then can get some questions. You have a planning department memo I'm sure you're cognizant of, and then we'll go from there. Do you need a second?
I think there's some people in the hallway from our abutting buildings.
Why don't we take a minute, just a minute, get everyone in here, and then we'll get started, okay?
for you, Fred, myself, Barney, Index, whoever else you want to do.
And no kidding.
All right. Charlie, could you grab your seats? I'm sorry to have kept everybody waiting. Attorney Stearns, since many of you may have been in the hall earlier, let me just briefly preview how we're going to go tonight. We've been at it for 2 hours plus. There ain't no fault of yours, but we have a very substantive project, Northland Project on Needham Street, that we're just starting to grapple with. Attorney says, what I'd like you to do is get maybe 15 minutes or so or less from you to give us an overview. There's materials in the packet. There's a planning department memo, which is very helpful. I really want to make sure I get public comment in this evening. That's very important. Tee up a few questions from colleagues, and then we're going to adjourn, hopefully by about 10 o'clock, and take this up. I think, Ms. Khan, August maybe? Or if that's problematic for you, Attorney Stearns, September would probably be better. It isn't going to happen next week.
I'm not asking for it to happen next week, but if it could happen in July, that would be important.
Right now, that's pretty unlikely, but let's see how this evening goes. We may not need to get there.
So just on the point of 15 minutes, our presentation would typically be a little bit longer. We'll go as quickly as we can, but we'll try, we'll reserve the right to continue our presentation at the follow-up date.
You'll absolutely have the right to continue your presentation. I really want to get us started, and I really want to make sure that members of the public who've been here for a period of time are heard tonight.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. It's Frank Stearns from Holland & Knight. With me tonight from Sheffield Hill Realty is Mark Levin, Steve Gladstone, and Margaret Murphy, and from Bene Brith Housing, Susan Gittleman and Max Glickman. The proposal we're presenting tonight creates a really unique opportunity for the city to take advantage of the alternative inclusionary zoning options in the ordinance to leverage the creation of more affordable housing for the city through an off-site rehabilitation of the historical building at 219 Commonwealth Avenue. Sheffield Hill Realty is working with Bene Brith to create workforce housing units at a percentage greater than the required 15%, meeting Newton's stretch goals for inclusionary zoning. We have a long relationship between Sheffield Hill Realty and Bene Brith developing affordable housing, including Bene Brith Housing's project to create 15 homeownership units down the street at 33 Comm.
This proposal allows the city to more than double the number of units which will go onto the subsidized housing inventory for the city. The proposal in your packet is for the allowed 29 units at 219 Commonwealth Avenue to all become income-restricted and rent-restricted units in perpetuity pursuant to the state's workforce housing program. We have a revision to the proposal which we will explain in more detail during this presentation, which deepens the affordability mix and makes the total floor area in 219 Commonwealth Avenue devoted to affordable housing units equal to the total square footage of the affordable housing units approved for Kessler Woods. The proposal allows the city to increase the number of affordable housing units for those up to 80% of AMI from 13 at Kessler Woods to 19 at 219 Commonwealth. Applied to the Kessler Woods exclusionary zoning requirement, this represents a change from meeting the requirement of 15% affordable to exceeding the requirement at greater than 20% affordable. The proposal allows Kessler Hill Realty to contribute to the diversity of the city's housing supply by having all the units serve residents from 65% of AMI to 100% of AMI under the state's new, recently put forward in 2016 Workforce Housing Loan Program. For reference, that's an income range of $47,000 for a household in a one-bedroom unit to $104,000 for a household in a two-bedroom unit. So those are the ranges of incomes that are being targeted largely by this state workforce housing program, which we're trying to be the first project in Newton to get off the ground utilizing this unique program. This is a concrete proposal which can achieve actual affordable housing occupancy this year. In the current marketplace of extreme retrenchment to federal subsidies, this is a unique and a timely opportunity. The historic building which you see on the screen at 219 Commonwealth Avenue, built in 1899, has been for many years largely a student-occupied building. Most of the apartments and the interior common areas have not been modernized or upgraded for many years. Chesapeake Hill Realty participated in a fully brokered bidding contest to buy this building at its market price in November of last year of $9.2 million. And that price reflected the presumption that all qualified bidders for this building would renovate it and operate it as an improved, fully market-rate apartment building. The neighborhood housing, ladies and gentlemen, will speak to the market reality that at a price of greater than $300,000 per unit, it's not feasible for a nonprofit to buy this building, pay the market price, and convert the building to affordable housing or workforce housing. The market pressures will only get worse as HUD funding gets decreased and tax credit financing becomes less reliable under current federal policies. As I said earlier, the commitment by Chestnut Hill Realty to pay a market price for this building, $9.2 million, reflects that the building is going to be forced by market pressure as market rate apartments. What Chestnut Hill Realty is offering is to treat $5 million of that purchase price, over half of that purchase price, as a contribution toward the affordable housing stock of the city by permanently deed-restricting the 219 building if the special permit amendment is approved. The Mass Housing Workforce Loan Program dedicates the units to workforce housing for 30 years. Chestnut Hill Realty will go beyond that and agree to rent restrictions in perpetuity. The program also contains enforceable covenants by the owner that it must repair and maintain the building during the course of participation in the program. It must have dedicated cash reserves for maintenance and repairs and capital improvements, and the owner is subject to being placed in default by the lender and by Mass Housing if it does not comply with the perpetual obligations. This is an important point because it was raised in our initial meeting with the trustees of the condominium from the property next door. I know they're here tonight, and I know they've expressed a concern to us about whether the building, going from what it's been for many, many years, which is a privately owned, largely student housing building, but a market rate building, whether there's a risk or a jeopardy that the building would suffer from deferred maintenance and poor upkeep and not have the ability to make capital improvements and repairs if in fact we make this permanently income restricted, because we're going to collect for less rent, obviously, than if it were market rent. And we want to be very assuring to our neighbors that in fact this type of regulated building typically actually has higher capital reserves and more covenants and commitments that require upkeep and maintenance over many years. The proposal fully respects that the designation of the building is on the State Register of Historic Places. There will be no enlargement of the building. There will be no expansion of the building. The historical exterior will remain the same. It will be improved. The landscaping will be kept up and so forth. The proposal will comply with the ADA and Massachusetts Code for Handicap Accessibility by making one of the units accessible along the accessway on the east side of the building, meeting the AAD requirements. Typically, with this type of off-site development, there's not only new construction and disruption in the neighborhood of the special permit project, but also in the neighborhood of where the off-site development is proposed. This proposal allows the greater contribution to the affordable housing inventory and the first use of the state's workforce housing program in Newton without any new construction, without any physical changes, without any neighborhood disruption associated with the off-site development.
Attorney Stearns, I'm going to interject here because we have two, because I think it's important. I want to try to get us moving along efficiently tonight. You've got two aspects here of this proposal. You're talking a lot about the second, which is what you're going to do with this piece of property on 219 Commonwealth Avenue. I suggest you have to address the first part of this first, which is whether, as a matter of public policy, we ought to be amending a special permit for Kessler Woods, which required inclusionary housing on the site, and is now taking it away, and especially in the face of a planning department memorandum that was, I'd say, unusually strong in terms of how the planning department weighed in on what its thoughts were in that regard, leaving aside the merits of 219 itself. So if you could focus your attention on that, I think that's what we have to get to first. And if and only if we as a committee say, yes, we're going to agree to that trade-off, do we get to whether 219 is a suitable site for that.
Understood. So we did a lot of history of the searching of the history of the approval of the Kessler Woods project. And we got very comfortable with the fact that going back many, many years to the original acquisition of the land by a joint venture of the city of Newton and the prior owner and developer Cornerstone, that the Community Preservation Act funding was used to fund the open space acquisition at Kessler Woods and the conservation restrictions at Kessler Woods. It was acknowledged at the time that the Cornerstone would need to build housing in order to partner with the city to buy the land. And the documents and memos from that process indicate that community housing was an additional benefit to the city. What Cornerstone did is they built Kessler Way, a by-right single-lot subdivision off of Newton Street, and it was understood that to build their larger project, they would have to get a special permit, which would require inclusionary zoning. And the understanding was is that whatever they proposed to build would be subject to inclusionary zoning. We looked at all the history of those documents, as well as the multiple times that Cornerstone amended the special permit, and in fact, the time that we amended our special permit, the type of housing, the amount of housing, and the location of affordable housing at Kessler Woods has changed over its 15-year history by special permit amendment with the city many times. And so we believe that when we evaluate Kessler Woods and then compare it to this building, the kinds of factors that come to our consideration relate to the reasons why we think this is good for the city. So primarily, one of the things that this project does is it puts more units on the subsidized housing inventory, 29 and 28 or 29 instead of 13. It increases the percentage of affordability. It makes a major contribution to the diversity of the housing stock in the city by leveraging this workforce housing program, which admittedly targets persons in the 60 to 120% AMI range. Our revised program is targeting people 65% to 100% AMI. We also evaluated the underlying conclusions and findings that were reached about the best location for the affordable housing. And quite honestly, the access and proximity to transit was always seen as a weak point of the Kessler Woods location. The access and proximity to schools was not seen as something that was as ideal as the location that we found. The access and proximity to job opportunities, grocery stores, and other shopping opportunities is also something that is much more robust at the location of 219 and more constrained and automobile-driven at the location at Kessler Woods. So that was really the context in which we originally came to the city of Newton. We talked to various stakeholders in the process, and we said we would be interested in exploring the idea of coming back for an amendment and asking the council to amend the permit to make a cash contribution. And we were told consistently by people within the city that it would be better if we went out and if we found a building. And we actually created created the affordable housing from the existing house, you know, in an existing building if we could find it. And that's exactly what we did. And when we found this building, we identified its benefits and we compared it in many ways to the location on LaGrange Street for Kessler Woods.
So I'm going to ask you to stop here for a second, Attorney Stearns, because I'm mindful of time, and as I said earlier, not your fault, ours. But I really think we need to grapple with the issue first of whether, as a matter of public policy, we're going to allow this kind of trade-off that you're proposing. And then, and only then, is this a good site for it. So
can I speak to that just briefly? We actually...
1 minute.
1 minute. We took to heart the comment in the planning department memo about that policy choice. And in fact, I would characterize the Newton zoning ordinance and the public policy in it differently than the planning department. They characterized the strong preference for the units being on site. I would characterize it as a strong preference for units to be created on site or off site, and less of a preference or a preference against providing cash, because in fact, in the ordinance, the standard, if you ask for an amendment to provide cash into funds at the city, is that you have to show an unusual net benefit. That's not the standard to do an on-site development, and it's not the standard to do an off-site development, which in this case is what we're targeting.
Just one question then. Haven't we had a consistent policy as a city for years now of trying to integrate our affordable units into larger projects so that they're seamless? I don't need anyone else to answer the question. It's just a question for Attorney Stearns.
So again, we don't want to pass judgment favorably or unfavorably on other projects of the city of Newton, whether they be 40Bs or whether they be special permit approved projects. But we're very aware of the fact that the off-site rehabilitation development option is in the ordinance for a reason, and it's there to accommodate situations where there can in fact be improvements in the experience of the affordable tenants or affordable owners, and where, in this case, where you do have another specific site as opposed to just putting money into a fund, you can identify the benefits of the alternative site versus the benefits or amenities at the on-site location. And I would just further note that, I'll leave it at that.
Why don't we hold it there? Mr. Heath, I know you had a presentation, but I'm very sensitive to getting input from the public. How long do you think yours would be?
Mr. Cronin, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Less than 5 minutes.
Why don't we hear from the planning department first, if it's okay with colleagues, and then we'll take public comment. And then we'll probably take, if there's time, a few comments from colleagues, and then we'll adjourn for the evening. I don't know, is it you, Mr. Corner, or Mr. Heath?
That would be me, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Attorney Stearns noted, this is a special permit petition to amend Board Order 102. Sorry about that. 102-06 per N 15, and to locate the inclusionary units off-site. Board order that is currently on site for Tesla Woods, now known as Hancock Estates, authorized a 4-story 88-unit apartment building with 13 de-restricted units. 6 of those units are de-restricted to households earning 50%. 6 are dedicated to households earning 80%, and 1 unit dedicated to households earning 65%. This results in a blended average of 65%. And the entire building is going to be eligible for a certificate of occupancy in the fall. This is just a breakdown of the unit mix. If you can see, the number of inclusionary units is 5 one-bedroom, 8 one-bedrooms, and notice the size of the square footage, around, give or take, 1,000 square feet, about 900 for the one-bedroom units. As Mr. Stearns noted, there is a section in the zoning ordinance that allows for inclusionary units to be met off-site. That criteria, or that ordinance, states that the petitioner must partner with a nonprofit organization specializing in housing. And as Mr. Stearns noted, the petitioner has partnered with Benet Paris, which specializes in affordable housing opportunities. And as once again Mr. Stearns noted, they're looking to locate these units off-site at 219 Commonwealth Avenue, recently purchased by the petitioner. 3.5-story multifamily building that has been used as a multifamily structure for many years, and is also listed on the Registered Historic Places, which limits, as Mr. Stearns noted, exterior modifications. This is just a quick aerial. As you can see, it is located in Chestnut Hill. Immediately to the north is Mount Alvernia High School. To the northeast and southeast is the Boston College campus. This is a quick recap of the program proposed by Attorney Stearns and petitioner. 13 units will be provided to households earning 65% of AMI, 6 units to households earning 80% of AMI, and 10 units available to households earning between 80 and 120% of AMI. All 29 units, if the project is approved, will count towards the city's subsidized housing inventory. And this is a quick breakdown of the unit mix. As you can see, this location is also offering studio apartments. Next slide. And this is a quick comparison of the inclusionary units. And this is at the 50 to 65% affordable level. So this shows the Hancock Estates mix and the 219 Commonwealth Avenue mix. And staff analysis is a brief recap. We do not feel they're comparable in terms of the type and size of units, the depth of affordability. The current board order provides housing at the 50% level of AMI, which 219 Commonwealth does not. The new building at Tesla Woods, also known as Hancock Estates, will be fully accessible by an elevator and will have modern amenities associated with the new building. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I'm going to take comments from members of the public. Who's to speak this evening? Remember, you're not precluded from speaking again or at a later night. I'll start off on this side. Ma'am, if you'd like to come up, you're welcome to, and I'll work back on this side, then we'll go to this side.
When the green is on.
Good evening, ma'am. And I'm going to ask people to keep their remarks to 3 minutes or less. State your name and address, please, first.
My name is Charna Heiko. I live at 209 Commonwealth Avenue next to the specified building for change. A couple of things that were said that I need clarification. In perpetuity, that was mentioned, and I wondered what happens if this particular building is sold at some point in the future. Does a subsequent landlord, is he or she encumbered with that in perpetuity clause? That was one thing.
We'll try to record the questions and provide answers at a later date so we get them right.
I'm particularly concerned of something that was mentioned previously as to the discrepancy between the services and the opportunities that are afforded at Tesla Woods versus 219 Commonwealth Avenue. The difference is tremendous. Amenities include things, as I understand it, as swimming pools. If I'm incorrect about that, I'd like to be corrected. Perhaps there are some weight rooms. Perhaps there are some other exercise applications that can be done there. And in addition, the idea of having one building that is solely market value and another building far away from it that is not market value at all and is used as a an emollient, shall we say, to the Tesla Woods buildings. I'm very concerned that there will not be the mix of income levels because of the isolation of low-income housing at 219 Commonwealth Avenue. I'm concerned when I look at the size of the buildings, of the units within 219, whether in fact they really can accommodate low-income people who have disability, who have children, for example. Also, if I understood correctly, there will be a variance, or they will be asking for a variance so that a ramp that meets ADA requirements will in fact be there. However, I think I heard it goes to one apartment. That doesn't really fulfill certainly the spirit of the law. And I'm very concerned about parking traffic. I'll stop there.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Next on this side, just moving back. Sir, come on up, please. Good evening.
Good evening. Jack Meter, 613 California Street, Newton. I'm here partially representing the Economic Development Commission because I've been on that commission now for 15 years, and we were involved in part of the negotiation of Tesla Woods and getting I don't want to use the word lobbying, but the mayor at the time asked us to talk to the people and get help with $5 million CPA money. The question that comes up is, when is a deal not a deal? The deal was you got $5 million of CPA money. The deal was you were allowed to build a certain number of units, and the deal was we need affordable housing on the south side of town. Okay, at some point, the gentleman over here is going to show you a map. There is no affordable housing in the south side of town. Okay, we sat in these discussions. We said, you're going to get this money. You're going to build it. You're going to build 1,000-square-foot apartments for families. Okay? And what they're proposing, this isn't apples to oranges. This is apples to lemons. Okay, you're talking about 540 square feet for a two-bedroom? Okay, versus 1,000 square feet in the south side of town, very different. And so the question I've got to all of you is, when is a deal not a deal? Okay, if they wanted to move the stuff off-site, 15 years ago was the time to put it in the agreement. The agreement that we approved and that we got you guys to vote for was you got $5 million and you got some good housing not quite luxury housing, but certainly upper middle class housing in the south end of town that was going to be affordable. That's my point.
Thank you, sir. Next, sir, come on up, please.
My name is David Edelman, 219 Commonwealth Path. For the last 30 years, I've never seen one child in building 209 Commonwealth Path. It's not a place for families. It was never designed for it. It's an open space. It's not a safety place to live for young children to play. If you even went across the street on Commonwealth Path, most dangerous intersection, it's a blind corner. Somebody will walk. A kid would definitely have a good chance to get hurt. My point here is, when you have 8 units of 2 bedrooms that can house roughly about 16 to 18 kids, they have the ability to go to a Newton school system that we're all part of paying taxes for, denying the opportunity to be there versus bringing them to 219 Commonwealth Ave, which is really not a kids-friendly or kids' environment. My question to the board here, how can you find that those are two of the same quality housing, safe environment, to kids to live in? I mean, if anybody looks themselves in the mirror, that you really, this is the place we want my kids to be at 219 Commonwealth Ave? Certainly not. Furthermore, after doing a little more studying there, the average one-bedroom that they're looking to rent there is roughly about $4,200 for one bedroom. And for the two-bedroom, it's roughly about $6,000. So if you really do the math, I don't care how many $5 million you want to give to the city, it's roughly about $80,000 a month in income just from those versus what they're selling. 219 Commonwealth Ave is a huge windfall for the developer. So I want to ask the board to keep the same way it was, because the original decision was the right decision, rather to displace people and put them in 219 Commonwealth Ave. Furthermore, if the developer wants to develop the property to non-profit, I think they're very deep-pocketed that can do it. They don't have to come and harm the 18 kids that's supposed to get a good education in our city. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next on this side, ma'am, come on up, please. And then I'll go, anybody else from this gentleman here, come on up, please. Good evening.
Good evening. I'm Rebecca Vallette. We've lived in Newton since 1965. We live at on Mount Alvernia Road, which is right around the corner from this building. I have several points I'd like to make, and the first point is the one of traffic for children. It is a very dangerous intersection at Commonwealth Avenue. In fact, the city no longer puts up these pedestrian signs. You know why? Because the cars run them down, and it costs the city too much to replace them. We don't have a traffic light. It's so dangerous we can't even have signs that say pedestrian crossing in the middle of the road. There is a further question that where are all these people going to be parking their cars? There is not very much parking on site, and right now the city has developed a carriage road with a neck down so that you have two lanes, and the parking there says resident parking. Now, in the winter, you're not supposed to park your cars overnight, and if the residents are parking them during the daytime, this is the road where all the families come to pick up their kids at Mount Alvernia School, and that will totally block the carriage road twice a day if we have cars parked all along the carriage road. So another major problem is that of parking. And the third is, I fully agree with the view of the city that we want to integrate housing, that we don't want to put all of the low-income people in one area and all of the better-to-do people in another area. And I fully agree that we should maintain the original agreement where there would be low-income housing at Tesla and perhaps at 219 there could be a few low-income units and then regular rental units. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir, come on up, please. Anybody else after that? Remember, the public hearing is not closing tonight. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Kevin Kane. I'm a lawyer with Holloway & Hollis, and I've been retained by the Abutter Condominium Association to address some of the issues. Let's start with the policy reasons that Attorney Stern, I don't think, really addressed. And I think the policy is set forth in Article 511.7. A, and B. And it essentially says that if you're going to go off-site, you have to provide the equivalent. This is not the equivalent. Simple as that. And I think the planning board got it right. There's no elevator here. There's one ADA compliant unit as opposed to every single unit being ADA compliant in the other building. If you, there's a point made about the public transportation. Yes, it's near the green line, but if you look at the priority list as to who gets first dibs on these units, highest on the priority will be people who live and work in Newton. And the green line goes to Boston. It doesn't go to Highland Avenue. So that's a bit of a canard, I think. Now, on the three issues that really matter to the abutters, in addition to all the issues that the planning board raised, are parking congestion and traffic issues. Here we have 10 spots, and we're going to replace Boston College students who have bicycles with workers with cars. We're going to have 29 cars versus 10 or less cars that are there now, and predominantly bicycles or scooters. That is a major problem for this particular area, and it is a dangerous area. The on-street parking is very limited, and during the winter there is none. The Manette Road, the school at the top of the hill is not a high school, it's a grade school. And the kids are picked up every day by their parents. They park on the side of Manette Road, and they clog it up, and little kids walk down that road every day. So if we put 26 cars going in and out of there, I think it's a much danger to those children as well as the children who might live at 219. The safety concerns have already been raised to some degree, but the playing on the road and that type of thing. The lead in the building is a very significant issue as well, and the abatement needs to take place not only in the common areas, but they need to address the soil, they need to address every unit, and I don't think that the developers really thought that one through fully, knowing that children could be living in any one of the units. They have only suggested encapsulation. Encapsulation, of course, can be broken any time during disruption to the surface of any of the encapsulated areas. Elder and disabled adults that might move into this area, no elevator. Only one ADA compliant unit, and the entrance will be on the side that abuts 209, where the fire escape comes down into that exact same area, and 209 has an easement for the area where the ramp is proposed. So that could be problematic. The future economic viability of the building is also a major concern. This developer can make all the promises they want to make, but if they decide to sell this building in the future, the only standard that this building will be held to will be the standard set by the city or the standard set by the state. It will not be the standard set by the market forces, if you will. So there'll be no incentive to modernize the building moving forward. And I know, I realize that you want me to keep it short, so I'm going to skip a great deal of what I had to say. But I did go to the development today, and the sign is out there, luxury apartments for rent. And I, too, did look at the rent. And this, the calculation I did is if you ship these at a minimum, they will get approximately $290,000 a year in additional rent. So I think that that's really what's going on here, and it's not offering some great benefit to the city. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And you're welcome to submit. If you have something in more detail, submit it to us in writing. Our committee clerk gets it to all of us. Any other public comment this evening? Yes, sir. Come on out. Again, the public hearing is going to remain open, so, you know, don't feel like if you don't speak tonight, you have to hold your peace forever. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Alvin Stern. I live at 191 Commonwealth Avenue. I've been living there since 1991. So my concern with 219 is that it always appeared to me that that building was never maintained properly. And I think that what's being proposed now will lead to even worse maintenance and upkeep of the property. And that's a serious concern that I have. So I think that the main point I want to make is that the original decision by the city was the right one, and that it should be a mix of units and not segregated, that the new building is all very expensive units, and 219 is entirely dedicated to workforce. And of course, the automobile issue versus the bicycles for the students is also another serious concern. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. So I'm going to...
Can I just clarify a question?
Right, sure.
Just the speaker made a comment. I just want to make sure I understand what he meant by it. You said that the upkeep will be less than currently. Why is that?
So because if it's dedicated to affordable, so lower rents, then there's no compelling reason for the owner to make the repairs to keep it at the same standard as a super high rent building. It's just it creates a disincentive.
I'm not sure that's,
in my opinion,
an accurate point, but fine. Thanks for clarifying why you said that.
All right, so colleagues, questions, comments? I want the petitioner to get some input. Councillor Cody?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one quick question to the attorney. What happens to 219 Commonwealth Ave if we don't approve this?
Well, the developer bought the building and would like to renovate the building. It will probably be, it'll either be remaining student housing, or it'll be sold, or it'll be market rate housing.
Anyone else? Councillor Santangelo, I neglected to introduce you earlier. Councillor Amy Santangelo, Councillor at Large from Ward 4.
That's okay. It's not a question to Mr. Stearns, but a question that you had raised earlier about whether we have precedent for this of going off site. I seem to think maybe terraces, but I don't know if they made a payment or not. But if you could look up in the past whether or not we have precedent.
You think it was the terraces?
I thought the terraces, because I remember I voted against it because, well, there were a lot of reasons why I voted against it, but I think the reason was because it was going to be an enclave, a luxury enclave, and
this is the one off of Langley and Ward 6?
Yes.
Okay. Ms. Young?
I think
you should be the 25th counselor at times.
No, I'm just an institutional filing cabinet. The thing that you're talking about had to do with the fact that, one, that's a condominium condominium development, not a rental development. But in that particular instance, the ordinance does permit the housing authority to elect to take cash in lieu of actually accepting units. And that is what the housing authority did in that particular instance, on the grounds that the tenants that they would normally put into those condominium units would not be able to afford to heat them up, plus there was a condo fee that would be a problem. So they elected to take cash instead, and you're quite right, that was not well received by the city council at the time, but that was the right that they had to exercise, and they did.
And if I'm not mistaken, too, that one was done contemporaneously with the initial special permit and not much later. If you could advise us there in any other situations where someone's coming after the fact to do what's being done here. Don't have to answer that now, but that would be helpful for us. Councillor Crosley, and then I think President Lett.
Thank you. This may be a moot point at this juncture, but I want to ask it since we're going to come back to this proposal in a few weeks. It's clear to me that you're not offering a comparable housing opportunity at the 219 Commonwealth Avenue. My question broadly is it possible to do that? I don't know that it is. I drove by the building today. It's now I see the floor plans. It's clearly a typical old constricted floor plan that would probably require an enormous amount of work to reconfigure to make even the units comparable. But I'm just going to ask you, is it possible, and how would you make them comparable? I mean, and it's clear they're not comparable, at not only in size, in terms of accessibility. You would have to put a lift in the building to make it even somewhat comparable, and in terms of amenities. But I don't see in what you're proposing, and I actually was one of the people years ago who shared a concern about the location of the Castle Woods project with respect to low-income housing. I think it's a relatively remote location in terms of other housing projects that we have permitted. They're, you know, we like things near public transportation and so forth, and walkable villages, et cetera. But I don't see that there's been as much effort as might be possible, given a greater expenditure of funds and put toward the renovation of this building, to offer comparable units, and in terms of the mix, because you're not offering any units that are lower than 65% in the new mix.
So given the time constraints, we'll respond to that in writing before the follow-up hearing, but I would just say in 10 seconds that our objective was not driven by trying to provide something absolutely comparable. We actually see that there are benefits and advantages that the 219 Commonwealth Avenue building have, that the Castle Woods building doesn't have and will never have, and that those are of value to the income spectrum contemplated by the workforce housing program. So it wasn't intended to create an equal match. It was intended to create a different, and in our mind, a better opportunity, but we understand the question.
Thank you. Councilor Schwartz, did you have a question? Anyone else? For what it's worth, I've seen the property. I've been on site visits that you've hosted. I think it would be wonderful if this property gets rehabilitated. It clearly is a parcel that, 219, that has not been well attended to over the years. I think my guess is the tenants would agree to that as well. It would be great. What I'm struggling with, and really it took the speaking to some of the Ward 8 counselors and speaking and reading the planning department memo, I'm struck by the differences, Councilor Crosley said, between what is being offered at Kessler Woods and what's being offered here. And I am very concerned about the idea that we have a project which this council spent a tremendous amount of time on, crafting, with the idea that we include people in these projects in what I would like to think is seamless, that we've spent a lot of time as a council talking about inclusionary housing, so that one just goes there and they don't know necessarily who's in the subsidized unit and who isn't. And it seems to me that's really good public policy that we'd be stepping away from here. So I'm just putting that out there that I'm struggling with that.
We understand that comment, and I would just like to ask that when we do have the continuation, that we will. There's a number of points that were raised by our neighbors, by the members of the council. My presentation lasts about 10 minutes, but I would like to respond to as much of this in writing as is customary and have a full opportunity to present this at the follow-up.
You will. This is just a tee it off, and Attorney Stearns, I assure you when you come back, you'll have ample opportunity to present, to respond to the questions and so forth. Councilor Schwartz?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I did realize that there was one thing on my mind that I didn't get a chance to mention. One thing that would help me would be if we heard from some of the affordable housing proponents in the city who know affordable housing and know what some of the trade-offs are as far as what's needed, what's desired, what's important to the community, because I don't feel fully able to make that policy choice at this point, but I'd love to hear more from them as far as, you know, A, are the aspects of this that are incomparable important? I mean, it seems on the face to be, but perhaps we're not seeing the whole picture. So that's what I'd like to hear from. I don't know if there's been any outreach.
Well, that's why we brought Susan Gilliman from the Neighborhood Housing with us. Again, I'm not forcing it on you now. I know you want to adjourn, but we're totally prepared tonight or at the follow-up meeting to have Susan and others speak to this from the affordable housing.
I'd absolutely welcome this gentleman's speaking, and since I would hope she'd actually do it at a little bit of length, I'm going to not start her this evening, but fully understand as part of your presentation, since she is and her organization is your partner in this, we very much want to hear from them. But I think I'm going to ask the planning department, Mr. Corn and Mr. Heath, if you connect with our various affordable housing folks out there, and if you might reach out to them and ask them to weigh in with their thoughts and opinions, that might help address Councilor Schwartz's concerns. Okay? Anybody else? Councilor Crosley.
I have to take this opportunity to say how much I miss our housing partnership. And there is a docket item to recreate it, but it has been disbanded by a purposeful neglect. And we did get a letter today from the longtime chair of the former housing partnership, and I think we should pay attention to that, and Josephine McNeil, who was also on the housing partnership. When Greg started speaking, that has been over many decades, in fact, a voice that has meant a great deal to us, because not only in terms of advocating for affordable housing, but understanding all the complications of putting the projects together, what the financing picture looks like. And I really miss that voice. And of course, I do believe that the planning department is in touch with and can be in touch with some of those folks. But we did hear from two.
And I'm aware of that. That was in everyone's materials today. We got emails. Yes, Councilor Santiago.
So I agree, Councilor Crosley, and with Councilor Schwartz, that we definitely want to hear from them. But I want to keep this in perspective. We're not talking about not wanting workforce housing or other types of models. We're talking about whether we should amend the special permit that was already granted, where we had vetted whether or not it was an important component of this development to have an affordable housing component within the development. Again, I think that is what they would speak to.
Right. All good points. I think Councilor Sangiolo makes a very important point. I think Councilor Schwartz and Councilor Crosley are asking some input from the housing advocates to get their perspective on that. Also, I hope very helpful. Anything else, colleagues? I need a motion to hold. Motion to hold by Councilor Lipoff. All in favor of holding? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Hold. It's held. I think we'll take this up. We're looking at, we can't do this in July, can we? July 11th? Alright. We'll try for July 11th. But for those of you who are interested in this, Ms. Khan is our conduit for all dates. You will not get another public notice, so please be in touch with her if you want to give her an email. Would you take an email address from people? If you want to be notified about the next hearing, you want to give her your email address, she'll do that. Okay? Thank you all very much. Thank you, Attorney Stern.